Ariel Helwani's MMA show is presented by Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit.
Hey everyone, it's your old pal Ariel Helwani back from Viva Las Vegas. I'm very excited about today's program. We got a lot to discuss with a lot of important people. But before we get to today's show, I want to tell you about something else I'm very excited about. My ride home tonight. You know why? So I can listen to the newest episode of the Hoop Collective podcast. Yes, that's why. As you know by now, I love basketball. I say it every week. I also love the work of the great Brian Windhorst. In fact, New York Rick in particular is a huge Brian Windhorst mark. And in his latest podcast, I'm told he and his guests look at LeBron James's case for the MVP. I think he should win it. And Zion Williamson's immediate impact on the Pelicans. That's the Hoop Collective podcast, which, by the way, TST also produces. This man is all over the place here at ESPN. And if you want to help him support the great people over at the Hoop Collective podcast and you want to support them as well, you can download and subscribe to the Hoop Collective wherever you get your podcasts. Also, before we get started, TST wants me to tell all of you that what you are about to hear may contain some language that is not suitable for all audiences. So, listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Monday, March 9th, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program. And my, oh my, oh my, oh my, do we have a lot to discuss on this Monday afternoon, a beautiful Monday afternoon. I hope that you all turned back. No, you didn't turn back the clock. You went forward, right? You spring forward and you fall back. So now we're springing forward, which means that in the UK, at least for now, they're only 4 hours ahead of us. But later on this month, it's going to be 5 hours ahead. Oh, it's very confusing. I don't know why we keep doing this. But it is 1 p.m. on the East Coast, and I'm ready to go. I got a lot to say, a lot to discuss coming off Saturday night in Las Vegas. UFC 248 is officially in the books. By now, you probably know that Israel Adesanya is still the reigning defending UFC middleweight champion. He defeated Yoel Romero in one of the more bizarre middleweight title fights in recent memory. Dare I say the most bizarre middleweight title fight since April of 2010 when Damian Maya fought Anderson Silva in Abu Dhabi. I was there. I remember it like it was yesterday. In that fight, the champion, Anderson Silva, fought the weird fight, didn't really bring the fight to the challenger. And I'll never forget UFC president Dana White in the middle of the fight taking the middleweight title and putting it, more like throwing it on the lap of Ed Soares, Anderson's manager, and saying, you put the belt on him. And then, of course, afterwards, the post-fight press conference, he was livid, he was red, very upset. It was a bit of a weird scene. And Saturday kind of reminded me of that because we had two great fighters who, for whatever reason, just didn't engage all that much. The first strike that was thrown came 90 seconds into the fight. Romero's first strike came at 2:37, if my memory serves me correct, of the first round. It was just weird, and there was so much anticipation, so much buzz. I saw this great tweet of them just kind of like moving but not really engaging, and someone saying it's like when you're trying to figure out the controllers before one of those video games back in the day with your friends. It really did remind me of that because they were just doing random things. And a lot of people have been talking about, you know, who's to blame and, you know, why did this happen, and have been very critical of the fight. And I think that I come from a bit of a different perspective, and I acknowledge this because I didn't pay to watch this fight. I didn't fly to Las Vegas. I didn't pay for tickets. I didn't pay for my hotel. I didn't order it on pay-per-view. So I'm strictly looking at it from a sporting slash athletic standpoint, not so much an entertainment standpoint. Like, of course, if you ask me, did the people who bought tickets to watch that fight and that fight in particular get their money's worth? Absolutely not. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying. Did the people who, you know, bought the pay-per-view get their money's worth because of that main event? It was on the marquee after all. It was the headliner. Absolutely not. It did not live up to the hype. It did not live up to our expectations. But I view MMA fights in particular sort of like I view a Venn diagram. Do you remember Venn diagrams when we were kids? I learned about them. I don't know if you guys did in your school, but a Venn diagram, and I'm probably going to butcher the explanation of this, but it's a circle here and a circle there. And then at some point they kind of meet together. And then the middle part is when it all comes together, the magic, so to speak. That's a horrible explanation, but I think you know what I'm saying. Like this circle, then you put another circle right there. And then there's like a part in the middle. You get what I'm trying to say? And so typically when I look at an MMA fight, you've got the one circle here that's sport. You got the one circle here that is entertainment, and the magic happens when they come together, right? When the sport and the entertainment aspect come together, and then you get a great fight, i.e. what happened in the co-main event. And of course, I will get to that in a moment. Well, in this particular case, the sport and the entertainment just didn't come together. They didn't meet. But that doesn't necessarily mean that in this case, Israel Adesanya is at fault. In fact, I would strongly argue that he fought a great fight, that he fought a smart fight. The most impactful blow of that fight probably happened in the first round. That big right from Yoel Romero. I believe it was a right. You know what I'm saying? That was the most impactful blow. The most damaging blow, in my opinion. Certainly, punch-wise. And so at that point, he said, look, this guy's not engaging, but when he does engage, the very few times that he does engage, he hits really hard. We all knew that about him. So, let's adjust. Let's attack the legs. You know, I do believe that it is incumbent upon the challenger. I've said this time and again, especially coming off the Dominic Reyes fight, that when you judge a fight, when you look at a fight, the idea, the notion that to be the champ, you got to be the champ is something that is like actually a thing. To be the champ, you got to beat the champ. When you're scoring a fight, people say, oh, he didn't do enough to take the belt away. No, that's hogwash. I spoke about this at length following the Reyes-Jones fight. Doesn't make any sense. It's not the way it is. All you have to do is win 3 rounds out of 5. That's it. Doesn't matter if it's the first, second, fifth, third, fourth, fifth, first, third, fifth. It doesn't matter. Just win 3 out of 5 and you're the champ. That's it. When you judge a fight, you can't think of it that way. You just have to score who won each round. But I do believe when looking at a fight from the standpoint of entertainment and sport, it is incumbent upon the challenger to set the tone, to bring the fight to the champion. It's sort of like the Valentina Shevchenko-Liz Carmouche fight that we saw back in August. In that particular fight, I thought that if there was anyone to blame, it was Liz Carmouche. Because if we're looking at this like a war or something, the champion is defending his land. He's defending or she's defending her belt. When you're defending, right? The people who are coming to take what is yours, whether it's your land or your belt, they're the ones who are the aggressor. They are the ones who are bringing the fight to you. You're just defending. Now, I know it's not apples to apples, but you get what I'm trying to say here. Yoel Romero had to go out there and bring the fight to Izzy. Izzy was the one who recognized how dangerous Yoel Romero was. Izzy was the one who was defending his belt. So he was waiting to see what he would do. He was playing his game. And once Yoel Romero was not being the aggressor, was not bringing the fight to Izzy, Izzy had no other choice but to stand back. And again, I'm not defending it from an entertainment standpoint. You know, I see some people like rolling their eyes at the notion that it was a great chess match. I don't even know if it was that, to be honest. It was just kind of weird. Like, this is your last chance to fight for a belt, probably, unless he moves up to 205. And at this point, with all the wacky title shots that are being handed out, who knows if he'll ever get, and like, I can't sit here and say he's never getting another title shot. But at 185, probably a good chance. And in the first 90 seconds, you're just doing that? Like, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. But the last thing I'm going to do is blame Israel Adesanya. How could you blame him? He's just taking cues from Romero. You want him to rush in with so much at stake? Not only the belt, but his pay? You want him to rush in and get clocked? You want him to rush in and get taken down? You want him to rush in and get knocked out? Why? So you can be entertained? Unfortunately, in this particular case, you would like it if both things happen, if you have a slugfest and you can also be entertained, but sometimes it's just not going to happen. This isn't Rock'em Sock'em Robots. It's sport. Sometimes there are very boring basketball games. Sometimes there are very boring hockey games. Sometimes there are very boring baseball games, soccer games. And I know it. I could see it now. Look at Ariel defending the main event. Let me be very clear. I'm not defending this fight whatsoever. I'm not defending the entertainment value attached to this fight. If I was trying to get someone to like MMA, I was trying to expose them to mixed martial arts, the last thing I would do is show them this fight. This fight was not good. It was boring. There was an element, though, I will say, where I was like, ooh, any single moment, something could change because Romero hits really hard and because Izzy has that knockout power. But sometimes it just doesn't produce a great fight. Happened with Tyron Woodley and Wonderboy Thompson. In the Anderson Silva versus Damian Maia fight, like, I felt like Anderson was just kind of acting weird for the sake of acting weird. And let's not forget, like, we glow about him now in his title reign, but he had a lot of weird title fights. Remember Patrick Cote, Damian Maia, Tallest Ladies? Like, let's not forget that not that long ago, we were talking on Monday mornings after Anderson Silva title defenses being like, this guy is just completely out of his mind and is not a fun champion, and we were looking for someone. I remember there was a time where people wanted Brock Lesnar to fight Anderson Silva. So let's not forget about that. But in this particular case, what I am defending is the notion that A, Izzy is at fault, because he isn't, and B, that he is not worthy of all the praise and hype that he has received. This is the one that pisses me off. Oh, he's overhyped. Oh, look at this guy now. He's not worth your money. He's not a draw. He's not a potential face of the UFC. Get the heck out of here. This guy's now 8-0, fastest ever to 8-0. And what, we want to talk about some of his other fights? What, the Whitaker fight? Didn't entertain you? Oh, the fight of the year against Kelvin Gastelum? That didn't entertain you? The Anderson Silva fight didn't entertain you? The Derek Brunson fight didn't entertain you? Get out of here. That is a joke. That is an absolute joke. You can't be on every single time. And so my big thesis is, all right, it was a weird fight. It was not fun. It was not entertaining whatsoever. But sometimes these things happen in MMA, right? Shout out to Gus Johnson. Sometimes sport, entertainment don't come together. And it sucks. And I feel for the people who bought tickets for that fight. I feel for the people who bought pay-per-views for that fight. I really do. I really do feel for them. It did not live up to the hype. But you know what did live up to the hype? Zhang Weili against Joanyan Jacek. All week long, we heard about how this was the fight to watch. UFC President Dana White, who rarely kind of picks one or the other when it comes to a situation like this, said on Tuesday to the media, this fight is the one I'm looking forward to the most on this card. I am looking forward to the co-main more so than the main. That's a big statement coming from him. And guess what? He was right. Anyone who said that was right. This was one of the best women's title fights I've ever seen in UFC history. Going into this fight, I thought the best women's title fight in UFC history was UFC 196, March of 2016, Holly Holm against Miesha Tate. Coincidentally, happened that same week, 4 years ago. UFC 196, Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor won. This one, and I try not to get too caught up in recency bias, this one might surpass that one. It really might. It was that darn good. If you missed it, these are some of the stats, but the stats don't tell the story. They both fought this fight in a phone booth. Neither one of them backed down. Both landed incredible shots from the entire arsenal. Both showed an insane chin. I mean, they took incredible shots back and forth, and you thought, all right, this is going to be the one. This is going to be the one. This is going to be the one. And they just kept going and going and going. In the end, I thought Zhang did enough to win the fight, 48 to 47. It has nothing to do with, you know, to be the champ, you got to be the champ. No. In the end, I thought she won 3-2, but holy smokes, what a fight from both of them. Wow. If you missed that one, please do yourself a favor and watch it. I can't wait to watch it again. Didn't have a chance to watch it again last night. I can't wait. I'm excited to watch it again at home with the commentary. I didn't get to do that on Saturday. I have so much respect. I am in awe of those two women. I have so much respect for what Joanyan Jacek has done to come back to this point. Remember, we talked going into last week. This is someone who lost twice to Rose Namajunas, who got knocked out the first time, who then lost via decision, who then moved up to 125 and lost to Valentina Shevchenko. We thought that she was in purgatory. We thought that she was done. We thought that she would never be in a title fight ever again. And I see everyone saying things about, oh, all you care about is being a model. Oh, all you care about is being on the beach. All you care about are your looks. All you care about this. Are you kidding? She is tougher than all of you combined. All you guys who write on her Instagram and troll her and say things like that, she is tougher than all of you combined. The shots that she took kept on going with that hematoma. Holy smokes. And I've checked in with her team multiple times. They say that she's okay. She was taken to the hospital afterwards. She was discharged several hours later. She was discharged before Zhang Weili was, believe it or not. That's how it looked on Saturday night in the cage. Could you imagine how it looked on Sunday? I can't even imagine. Start to think about some of the great hematomas, or the more memorable hematomas in the history of combat sports. And there she is as she was leaving the hospital, that courtesy of her management team over at Balanji Group. It reminded me of Mark Hominick at UFC 129. Do you remember that one against Jose Aldo? Look at that. That was a gnarly one. It reminded me of Haseem Rahman against Lennox Lewis. I believe it was Lennox Lewis off the top of my head. Do you remember how gnarly that one was? There have been some gnarly, gnarly hematomas back in the day. That's the Hominick one. Haseem Rahman is one that comes to mind. There he is, over the eye, the former heavyweight champion. Fernando Vargas comes to mind. You ever see that one? That's one that's been forgotten about over the years. Another really tough one to look at. Jerome LeBanner comes to mind back in the day. Matt Mitrione had a gnarly one as well against Brendan Schaub. There's the Fernando Vargas one. So these aren't things to necessarily be celebrating, but it did remind me of that and just speaks to how dangerous these athletic contests are and how much is at stake. And so you see what they went through in that fight and you think about what happened in the main event, you can understand. This is serious stuff. This is dangerous stuff. Things like that can happen. Life-altering things can happen. Now, what the two women in that co-main event did was nothing short of amazing. I am in awe of what they did, like I said. Just, I mean, look at that. Look at the difference. Look at what happened to her. And that's in the fight. And you're going to get repeated blows to the head throughout the fight. This happened midway through the fight where she started to swell up. And you know, it's something that hasn't really been talked about a lot in the aftermath. I mean, there's been a lot of, you know, accolades being thrown towards this fight and a lot of glowing, a lot of, you know, celebration of it being the night before International Women's Day and the fact that the two women in the co-main, you know, kind of outshined the men in the main and all this stuff. One thing that I feel like in the aftermath hasn't been discussed all that much is the journey that Zhang Weili had to go through to get to that fight is incredible to me. Like the pressure that she had on her, the distractions that she had, the issues that she had to deal with just to get to that fight, and then to perform like that, and then to rise to the occasion like that, and then to defend your title like that, to me is just unbelievable. Again, around a month ago, she's in China training at home. Coronavirus outbreak starts to spread, starts to get really serious. There's concern that she won't be allowed to travel to the United States. So she packs her things up on hour's notice and goes to Thailand. Is in Thailand for a week, getting settled, getting acclimated. No real training camp there, no real gym set up there, but she's making the best of it. And then finds out that the threat has expanded. And now she has to pack up on hour's notice and go to Abu Dhabi. No training camp there, no gym there, no setup there. She has to go to Abu Dhabi to get quarantined for 2 weeks. Calls her mom, is emotional, doesn't know if she can go through with it. Goes there, gets acclimated, gets quarantined, and then flies over to Las Vegas, has to get acclimated again. I mean, that is a lot to deal with a month before your very first title fight. Who knows what's going on back home, right? Who knows what your family, your friends are dealing with. We see the news now. This isn't just a China problem. This is a worldwide problem. It's a global problem. Who knows what's going on up here? The pressure, the nerves, the anxiety, and she performs like that. Wow. What a performance. Unbelievable stuff. She is going to be a star, and she's learning more how to speak English. And by the way, I wouldn't hate it if, you know, they ran this one back. They're probably going to need some time. I suspect that the winner of the Rose Namajunas versus Jessica Andrade fight on April 18th is going to be, you know, the fight that produces the number one contender. You'll either get a rematch against Andrade or a fresh fight, which would be a fascinating fight against Rose Namajunas. But at some point, who would say no to a rematch between these two? And sometimes when a fight is really great, you don't want to run it back right away because it's kind of like in movies, right? How could the sequel be better than the first? In this case, given the way these two fight, how aggressive they are, how they bring the fight to each other, I mean, I don't think it's a crazy notion to say that the second fight could be just as entertaining, if not more, than the main event. Co-main event, I should say, on Saturday night. So that was just amazing stuff. Overall, a fun night in Las Vegas. And we will be talking about some of the highs and lows throughout today's program. Some other notable performances. Beneil Dariush had a great win on Saturday. What a back and forth that was in the third to last fight on the card against Strakhar Close, showing some real knockout power. Beneil Dariush, who's known primarily for his ground game. What about the return of Sugar Sean O'Malley? He had a great performance as well in his first fight back in 2 years. Marco Mattson, Rodolfo Vieira had a great performance as well. So there was a lot to like from that card. Deron Wynn lost to Gerald Meerschaert, so we wonder where he goes from here. A lot to like. And then it ends with Adesanya getting the title and then, you know, getting back the title on his waist and then looking for Paulo Costa. There was apparently a scene that happened cage side where Costa went over the railing along with his manager Valid Ishmael, and then they had to be escorted out. So we never really got a face off for much of an interaction afterwards. It seemed like Romero was the one interacting with him. And I want to let you know off the top that Paulo Costa was supposed to be on today's program. Unfortunately, just about 2 hours ago, he had to reschedule, so he is not going to be on today's show. We wanted to get his thoughts on what happened Saturday night. Unfortunately, that is not going to happen on today's program, but I can assure you that we will speak to him in short order. For now, though, let me tell you about who is going to be on today's program before we get to our first guest of the day. At around 3:30, we're going to be joined by the reigning defending UFC middleweight champion, the last stylebender himself, Israel Adesanya, will be on the program. I am looking forward to talking to him about what happened on Saturday. At around 3:05, we're going to be joined by that man, Bob Arum, CEO, Top Rank. It has been 11 years since I interviewed Bob Arum. Some of you longtime fans may recall that this man is someone who kind of helped kickstart my career. Back in 2009 at Yankee Stadium, he was there to promote Manny Pacquiao against Miguel Cotto. We had a infamous, memorable interview, if you want to call it that, and I have not talked to him since. I am looking forward to talking to Bob Arum later on in the program for the first time in 11 years. We'll talk to Zhang Wei Li at around 2:40 or so. I'm looking forward to talking to her about what she did on Saturday, how great that performance was, and where she goes from here. We will talk to Valentina Shevchenko on the program at around 2:10 or so. I'm looking forward to talking to her. She's in New York City getting ready for her next title defense on June 6th in Perth, Australia. And she said on Twitter yesterday, she wrote on Twitter, I should say, that she thought Joanna won the fight. And last week on my Wednesday podcast, Zhang's manager, Brian Butler, spoke about how they are very interested in a fight against Valentina Shevchenko at 125. I am curious to get her thoughts on that statement. At around 155, we're going to be joined by Jay Park. Yes, that Jay Park. Remember, he was on the program a couple of weeks ago serving as the Korean Zombies translator, but he's not a translator. He's a Korean-American hip-hop artist, a huge star over in Korea. He does a lot of singing and dancing and things of that nature. A lot of people are big fans of his. Well, unfortunately, he was allegedly involved in an altercation with Brian Ortega on Saturday night at the event at the T-Mobile Arena. We will get his side of the story. I've reached out to Brian Ortega on two occasions, once this morning and another time on Saturday, to get his side of the story. Thus far, he has not gone back to me. He just wrote back to me, haha, on Saturday, but didn't respond to my second question or query this morning asking if he wanted to give his side of the story. So we will talk to Jay Park about that. Neil Magny will join us at 1:40, talk about his big win on Saturday. He had a nice performance coming back for the first time since November of 2018. A nice win over Li Jingliang. But first, we will talk to Sugar Sean O'Malley. What a big win for him on Saturday night. What a great performance against Jose Quinones. Before we get to my conversation with Sean O'Malley, here's what he had to say after the big win on Saturday night.
Yeah, it feels really good. I was saying I hope it happens because, you know, you saw the pending results and they test me all the time. So felt good to just like get to the fight. You know, Jose made it, no issues. I made it, and then we made weight. So once when I was in Vegas and he was in Vegas, I was like, and it was fight week, I'm like, all right, there's still a couple things that can go wrong. So, and it's hard not to think like that when everything has gone wrong leading up to fights. You know, so the whole fight camp, it was in the back of my head, like, well, might not make it, might not even happen. So to be standing here, getting that finish, it feels good.
So that was Saturday night. Now let's talk to Sean O'Malley live on the program. Kind enough to join us after his big win on Saturday in Las Vegas. The man himself, Sugar Sean O'Malley, joined by his dog as well. Sean, how are you?
Good. How are you, Ariel?
What's this young pup's name?
This is Kush.
Oh, that's Kush. We've met Kush before, right?
Yeah.
Okay, still kicking it. I like it. Respect. Yeah. Kush, thank you for joining us. Ooh, that's a nice painting you have back there of Bob Marley. I like that very much.
Thank you.
Well done. And well done on Saturday. Congratulations. You were very emotional after the fight. You can hardly speak when Joe Rogan was trying to interview you. Could you describe what you were feeling after you realized that you were back and victorious once again?
Yeah, I was just, you know, I take my dogs on walks, and I was just picturing that moment for a long time, like standing there with Joe, getting a finish. It's hard to explain and put into words how I was feeling, but you know, it felt good.
Do you still feel like you're kind of on a high from Saturday? And I mean like the high from the victory, not other stuff.
Oh, yeah, it was. Vegas is a very stimulating place, and then you add fight week to that. You know, you got all the cameras in your face. You got someone's following you with a video camera. For 7 days, getting everything you do. But I feel like I'm coming down from it. It's back to regular life. Got my boys right here. It's back to training and chilling.
Oh wait, now there's a second dog. Who's this one? I don't know if we've ever met this one.
No, you met Pete. That's
okay,
Pete.
My
that's
bad.
That's my firstborn.
All right. Well, Pete, is there a third one or just two?
No, just two.
Okay. By the way, I saw a photo on your Instagram afterwards where you were in your what appeared to be your hotel, enjoying some post-fight celebratory stuff, and you were still wearing your gloves. Did you keep your gloves on? was that a real picture? Did you keep your gloves on all the way back to the hotel? There you are. That looks like a hotel room. Am I wrong?
No, that's the hotel room.
Why'd you keep your gloves on?
I just put them on.
Oh, just for the...
Take them on and off.
Just for the gram.
Yeah.
Okay. See, I'm very perceptive. It looked like you still had the wraps, but I guess you don't have the wraps on in this picture. That would have been incredible.
That would have been good. That would have been good.
Well, in my mind, I concocted this story that you were so happy to be back. You just didn't want to take off the gloves because you missed it so much, and you went all the way back to the hotel room and slept with them. That sort of thing came to mind.
No, it would have been funny, though, walking around the strip just in my fight. With the shorts and my gloves. It would have been good.
When you were dreaming about that moment with Joe and dreaming about coming back, did you dream about the fight going like that? Like, was that just the perfect fight for you? I would imagine you didn't walk away from that fight being all too mad about anything.
No, yeah, I saw that fight, like, okay, this fight could play out like that. Anytime you're that much faster than someone, and I'm that accurate, that just can happen. That could happen any fight. Anytime I fight, I can knock someone out in the first round. Especially if they're gonna, you know, come forward and he was trying to land some shots. So I wasn't surprised it happened like that. I would have liked to fight a little bit longer. Just, you know, it's been 2 years. I wanted to fight. I've been in fight camp forever. So I wanted to fight for a little bit longer, but you obviously can't complain about getting a first round finish.
Up until you even like walking out to the cage, did you really think in the back of your mind that something would preclude you from fighting, that they would stop you and say, this thing has come up? Were you nervous about it even in the locker room?
No, I think Tuesday or was it Wednesday? Tuesday or Wednesday, they said, hey, your last result came back. It was negative, so you're good. So that right around there, I was like, okay, now we're good.
Do you feel like
all the way up the whole fight camp, I was feeling like that.
Do you feel like you're officially in the clear now? Like this is now behind you, or will it just be something you'll have to worry about for the rest of your career?
Should be. I mean, should be in the clear, but we'll see.
Okay. And by the way, you still have the braids in. When do you take those out?
I don't know. That's a good question, Ariel.
Well, thank you.
That's a good question. Sometimes I just leave them in for a little bit.
Really?
I actually got to. Yeah, my sister's playing. She plays has state basketball in Montana, so we're gonna head to Montana Thursday and go watch her do that. So actually, no, wait, that's a surprise for her. So
oh no,
never mind.
Okay, yeah. I won't ask you any follow up. Beep. she doesn't watch this anyway. Let's be honest. Tim Welch is your head coach now, right? And he is also from Montana. Am I right?
Yeah.
It seems like you guys have a really special thing going, and it seems like, you know, when a young fighter is able to find that coach who's able to guide them and you have that connection, you know, I'm reminded of what DJ has with his head coach, right, and what Conor McGregor has with his head coach. Do you feel like you guys have that special bond? And if so, could you describe it? Why is it so special between you two?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's been pretty much like my head coach, you know, even when I was kind of at the end of my amateur career. Ever since I moved down to Phoenix, he was still fighting. So I've been in Phoenix for about 6 years. He was still fighting at the time. So, but every time I had a fight, booked, you know, this was probably what, 3-4 years ago. Every time I had a fight booked, he would, you know, kind of go into coach mode and he would hold pads for me. And then, you know, I just had, then we turned pro, same thing. He was coming down to the fights with me, but yeah, I think our relationship's so special. The first 2 years we were in Phoenix, we lived together. And I think you just kind of build like that friendship, that chemistry, and he knows my striking really well from watching my rounds, my sparring rounds, holding mitts for me. He knows all my little tips and tricks and setups. And then for grappling, like we train with Tanquinho and we do live goes, you know, two, three times a week. And so he knows my grappling better than anyone. He knows my striking better than anyone.
Oh.
But so yeah, I think, sorry.
No problem. It's the beauty of the show.
Yeah, I think he just knows my game more than anyone. We've sparred before, obviously not hard, but he stands in front of me and he feels my speed and he knows my setup. So I think he just, you know, if he says something and I'm in the cage, I hear it and I trust it. I'm like, okay, this, you know, he obviously sees something and, you know, I'll probably end up throwing it.
I love the connection that you guys seem to have, and it's obviously working. You're doing great things. I love this tweet that you posted as well just a few hours ago. You said, "I don't know if it's true, but I heard Cejudo peed his pants a little during my fight." LOLs. Did you hear such a thing, or are you just kind of putting it out there?
No, I was just high last night watching my fight, and after my fight, they went to Henry. He's just a little dude, and I was just laughing. It'd be funny if he peed his pants a little bit.
But is there some, like, do you feel like you're getting closer? I mean, 2 years off, obviously you need to come back. You need to do something great. You did that. When you think of the Cejudos, the champions, the top dogs at 135, how far away do you think you are from those guys?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to put a time frame on it. I'm 25. I'm not in a hurry. Like, I need to get there. But, I mean, I'm pretty big bantamweight, but not in the sense to where I kill myself cutting weight. Like I feel like the weight wise, I'm pretty normal. I think I was probably 151, 152 that night. But I think just like my frame, and I'm big, I'm long, I'm fast, and I'm accurate. It's just it's a scary, deadly combination. So I'm sure whether they were probably like, okay, that could be a legitimate problem. But I was just, yeah, that tweet, I was just eating, smoking a little joint, laughing, and just watching my fight. So it was just funny.
Afterwards, Dana White said that they want to get you back in there relatively soon, you know, make up for lost time type of thing. Are you down with that as well?
Yeah, definitely. It's, like I said, I felt like I was in camp for a long time. So I got in really good shape, and to fight for 2 minutes, I didn't even breathe through my mouth once.
Wow.
I was nasal breathing that whole time. I didn't even sweat. So yeah, I want to go check out the calendar, see where some certain fights are, and check it out.
Anything that sticks out to you? Any location? Any date that you really like so far?
I haven't even looked, honestly.
Okay,
so not yet, but we'll probably do that this week. I'm gonna get back to training. Like, obviously, no injuries, so get back to training, get back to the drawing board, and get better and figure something out.
How about the dreaded opponent question? You know the one.
Who next?
Yeah. Well,
I don't know.
Look at Corporate Jake stirring the pot. I mean, really. What do you think of this guy? Brian Boom Kelleher calling you out again.
Dude, I've been called out by nine people. I ain't got nothing to say to any of them.
Why not? How come you don't like to engage?
They don't get my shine right now.
They're clout chasers, right? Is that what the kids say?
Pretty much.
But Boom seems to want you. Like, he's been calling you out for like 2 years now. I feel like even more so than that before the stuff with the USADA and all that.
Yeah, he's been calling me out for a while. There's been a couple of them.
Do you think that they actually have beef with you, or is it just you get it? It's almost like a compliment, right? They want what you have.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. By the way, did you stick around and watch the main event?
No, we went up to the hotel room and watched the co-main and the main in the room.
Okay. Could I just ask you, you know, because it's such a hot topic, on this Monday, when you watched the main event, what was your takeaway? Like, do you blame someone? Do you feel like, this guy kind of blew it? As a pro fighter who knows about this stuff way more than any of us, what was your big takeaway after watching that somewhat bizarre main event?
Yo, I was just standing there at the beginning of that first round. That's so funny. it's hard. It's hard to get offensive on someone like Yoel, if he's not going to do much. Cause every time Izzy did get offensive, Yoel explodes. So yeah, that's a tricky fight. And I think just their two styles just didn't match up for a super exciting fight. I don't really know I wouldn't say it's someone's fault, but yeah, I think Izzy definitely won. You gotta beat the champ more than that if you're gonna want to win. But yeah, that was a tough one, especially like Dana said, a tough act to follow after that girl fight.
Right, that was incredible.
Those
right?
Guys are animal. Yeah, incredible. So yeah, I think the fans were a little spoiled, and then just watching those two stand in front of each other for 25 minutes, you know, it's exciting. Just the anticipation, waiting if something's gonna happen. So I didn't think it was a horrible fight. I think Izzy did what he needed to do.
Yeah, and sometimes that doesn't mean an exciting fight, right? But you got to keep the belt to keep winning fights and make money and things like that. So it's just an unfortunate thing, but we have to recognize the dangers involved in what you guys do each and every time you go in there. By the way, Ring Rust, do you subscribe to this notion? Is it a real thing to you? I mean, you clearly didn't seem to show off any Ring Rust, but were you worried about this?
No, I think that's just mental. Okay. I've been in the gym nonstop. So it's not like I think if I had not trained for 4 or 5 months, or if I hadn't trained for a while and then started training again, I'd be like, shit, I probably should have been training. And that's where your ring rust comes from, thinking, shit, I should have done this, I should have done that. But I literally did everything right these last 2 years. There's not one thing that I look back and go, I could have done that better. I've done everything right. So there's no nothing going into the cage, completely calm.
And I saw on your Instagram, I think it was this morning, but maybe it was from last night, given the time difference. Did you have you had two massive plates of pancakes and eggs and things like that? Man, that was a lot. Was that just for you?
No, that was a little bit for Danny, but I ate most of hers too.
Okay.
But no, yeah, that's just something we like, those little fight camp cravings you get at night. You just like, you think of all these ideas. So, I was craving some pancakes and some eggs, and, something we do. We just eat a little food and watch my fight. That's another thing. It's only 2 minutes to watch. So, yeah. You know, you can only watch it so many times, but.
And just to be clear, that's not Danny, your manager, right? Danny, your girlfriend that you had the
right.
I felt so bad for you after the media day on Thursday. We were at a restaurant. You and your team were there as well, and you just had to sit there, and they're eating tremendous food
all week.
That's got to be torturous, right?
Literally all week, especially Tim. That dude likes to eat, so all week it's pretty much me following them around, going out to eat. And I'm watching, but it makes you appreciate food on another level.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you really until you eat and then you just start stuffing your face again. But it makes you appreciate food a little bit more than, you know, not being able to eat. I think everyone should have to do it. Go through a little fight camp, a little, you know, watch what you eat for a couple weeks and be good for you.
And look at that outfit. Unbelievable stuff. From the start of the week to the end, you reminded people why everyone was so high on you when you were, pardon the pun, were first on the scene in the UFC, and why we continue to think that you're one of the rising stars in this sport. Sean, I appreciate it as always. Really happy for you, man. Congratulations. Enjoy the victory, and looking forward to seeing you back in there soon enough.
Thank you, Ariel. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. There he is, Sugar Sean O'Malley. I asked him about Ring Rust. Some people believe in it. Some people don't. Dominic Cruz is probably the loudest proponent, or I should say detractor. Is it proponent or detractor? I don't know. My mind is mush. He's against it, okay? Proponent would be someone in favor of it. Detractor would be someone against it. of Ring Rust, and it sounds like that's perhaps an Arizona thing because Sean O'Malley not in favor of it. You know who's not in favor of it as well? Neil Magny, out for 476 days, longest stretch of his career. And his last fight was in November of 2018 against one Santiago Ponzinibbio, but he came back in a very big way on Saturday against Li Zhengliang, and he's kind enough to join us right now via the magic of Skype. There he is, Neil Magny, joining us. Neil, how are you? Congratulations on the win.
Oh, thank you so much, dude. It's great to be on the show here, finally.
Yes, it's good to have you. You were on a couple of years back, but it's good to have you back on in the ESPN era. Do you believe in Ring Rust? Are you someone who maybe going into the fight, you thought Ring Rust was the thing, and maybe now after the fight, you don't think it's a thing?
So it's kind of weird the way I approach Ring Rust. So I feel like there's a way you approach your fight after an injury and a way you approach your fight after a timeout due to something like I just came through. So when I came back from a 9-month layoff due to injury, I did feel a bit hesitant going back in the cage. I wasn't sure how my body was going to hold up post injury, and that made me kind of hesitant, as opposed to this last fight where I was healthy for those 400 plus days and training every single day. So when I came back to the cage, I felt like I was ready and willing to do whatever it takes to get a win. I definitely think there are two components and two ways to look at Ring Rust and how do you define it?
Your story, well documented, everything that you had been through with USADA and the time off and whatnot. And, you've had so many fights in the UFC. In fact, I saw an amazing stat. I don't know if you know this. You probably do, but you probably know who has the most wins in UFC welterweight history, right?
Yeah, George St. Pierre, 19.
19. Do you know how many wins you have? Well, we just gave it away.
I'm keeping up there with 15. I mean, that was something I was talking to my coaches about in the airport. I was like, man, it's crazy to see how literally 10 years ago, being a 19-year-old kid watching Matt Hughes train for his fights, and now to be 10 years later being put in the same conversation and list as Matt Hughes, that was just an amazing thing for me.
And really, I mean, it's not a crazy notion. If all continues to go well for you, you're just 32. There's a very good chance that you're going to pass George St. Pierre. Is that kind of surreal to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, man. It just shows that I'm doing the right things and I'm taking advantage of every opportunity I've been blessed with thus far.
And so the reason I bring this up is you've been in so many fights, you fought on very big shows, but were you maybe a little more nervous going into this fight because of the time off, because of everything that you had been through over the last 2 years?
No, I felt like I was confident, probably more confident than ever going into this fight. The time off actually gave myself and my coaches time to really sit back and dial some things in. One thing that we took away from the Ponzinibbio fight was preparation. I felt as if I didn't do the best I could to prepare for that fight, and it definitely showed in the fight. So going into this training camp, we really honed in on how we were going to prepare for it, and we felt that preparation was key. So going into this fight, I was more confident than ever.
Why did you not do enough to prepare for that fight in hindsight?
So looking back on it, like I didn't break down film even for Ponzinibbio. I literally remember walking into the gym, looking at one of my coaches, and it was like, hey, man, watch film on this guy. All you got to do is go out there, be you, and you're going to freaking kill him. And I was like, all right, cool. Work hard. Go out there, be me, and I'm going to win the fight. And during the fight, I heard his cornerman break me down pretty well. They were telling him different cues, different things that they noticed that I was doing throughout the fight and fights prior. And I can tell that they really did a good job preparing for it. They knew when to engage, when not to engage, where to force me as far as position goes, like in the octagon. So it sucked being in there and experiencing that and seeing that. But at the end of the day, it was a great takeaway for me.
And, you know, perhaps maybe the biggest change of all since the last time we saw you is you're a father, right? You welcomed your is this your first child, Liam? First child?
Yeah, first child. I was able to welcome him into the world January 21st, my wife and I. And it's been an amazing journey so far.
Incredible. And there you are holding your first son. I mean, it's just an amazing thing. It really changes you, right? Did you feel like maybe you were fighting for different reasons, different perspective now that you're dad? I mean, and you just experienced this incredible, life-changing moment, less than 2 months ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the biggest thing that I felt was a change for me was, going into that fight, I felt like, I'm going to go out there and try wasn't enough. My attitude, my demeanor, my mindset had to be I'm going to go in there and get it done. Like, there's no way I can look at him and say, hey, son, I'm going to try and provide for you for your future. I'm going to try and secure this for our future. My mindset had to be, I'm going to go in there and get it done and literally do whatever it takes to make that happen.
And I love his middle name in particular, Jacques, French name. Why did you guys pick that name?
My family has some Haiti origins, so French is a pretty big part of my family. And my full name is Outnel Jacques Magny, so French is a pretty big part of my culture, my family. And Jacques is my middle name. It was my father's middle name, my grandfather's middle name. It's my older brother's middle name. So it's been a name that's been in the family for a while. So not being able to get a junior, I felt like having that strong Jacques in the middle was going to be a great thing to honor my family.
I didn't know that about you. I didn't know about the Haitian roots. That's awesome. And also, you know, obviously when you have a child, especially for the first time, there's a lot of changes as far as like sleep at home, changes like that, you know, just trying to get your life in order, coming back from the hospital. And to go through that right before such a big fight for you, how did you manage that? Sometimes I've heard of fighters like going to sleep somewhere else so that they're not woken up in the middle of the night, which is very tough, obviously, on the mom involved in the situation. How did you and your wife balance that?
Man, my wife did a great job of allowing me to rest throughout the night and really take care of the baby throughout the night on her own. I mean, there were days that I'd wake up and just see her physically exhausted, and I'd try to help out. And she's like, no, babe, you got training today. Go take care of you. I'll be okay. I can stay here with the baby. And she did her best to really pull through for us, and I definitely appreciate her for that. But it was definitely a long process. I mean, I literally remember being at the hospital just hours after my wife's given birth, and I get a notification from your side like, hey, man, we're at your doorstep, and no one's answering the door.
Oh, no.
And and I'm having the response. I'm like, hey, I'm currently at the hospital. My wife just gave birth. Is there any way you can meet me here for the drug test? And lucky enough, they were able to meet me at the hospital. We got it done there. But
but
it's been crazy, dude. Like, it's I definitely got a different level of appreciation for my wife, and definitely realized I picked a great partner to go through this with.
Wow. By the way, where did you do the test? Like, did they meet you in the lobby of the hospital, or did they come up to the room? How did you get that done?
I literally met the test in the lobby, and we just went and sat on the bathrooms on the main level floor and just got it done there.
Did she bring you flowers, you know, a balloon, a stuffed animal, anything?
Nope. Brought me 3 cups to choose from. Like, all right, dude, let's go.
Process. That is amazing. That is incredible. Anytime, any place. By the way, were you bothered by the fact that you were an underdog betting wise going into this fight, considering your long resume and, you know, he's been in the UFC for obviously a good chunk of time, but he hasn't fought in the kinds of fights that you have fought in.
No, not at all. I mean, I wasn't surprised about the stats of being the underdog. I mean, with the time off and that kind of thing, it was kind of a question mark. Like, oh, how is Neil going to bounce back from his last fight? I mean, if you look at the last fight, I mean, I took a beating. So it definitely did leave a question mark in a lot of people's mind as to how I was going to return at this long layoff coming off a loss and that kind of thing. So it didn't surprise me at all being the underdog, but man, did it feel good to go out there and hear from the fans like, dude, I made so much money off you. Way to pull through for me. It was a great night.
Afterwards, I saw that you said that you liked the idea of fighting Michael Chiesa. Why him? No?
Yeah, yep. The fight against Mike Chiesa was definitely one I was shooting for. I mean, he came up to welterweight. He was doing a lot of good things. I mean, I was truly impressed with his fight against Carlos Condit. And I was even sitting there watching the living room, and I was like, man, he really showed some different skills there against the Condit fight. And then shortly after, I see that he called me out, and I was like, huh, that's interesting. So I immediately tried to make that fight happen. For some reason or another, it didn't pull through. And since then, he went on to win 2 more. And to be honest, I've just been impressed with his run at welterweight, and I think that'd be a great matchup for me.
Yeah, I like that fight. And we just showed the tweet right over there. It seems like he's into the idea as well. It seems like he likes that. So when you have two fighters who are on board with the idea, that probably makes things a little easier on the matchmakers. Before I let you go, Neil, and can you hear me? Can you hear me okay?
All right, there we go.
You hear me now?
The Bluetooth. Yes, sir.
All right, cool. I just wanted to ask you before we said goodbye, one of my favorite stories in the sport right now, you know, I love to see gyms kind of rise up, and when there's kind of this band of brothers thing where, you know, a bunch of fighters are rising up and it's a rising tide that lifts all boats. We see this with City Kickboxing. I think we see it also with the Elevation Fight Team, which you're kind of the leader of that team as far as the fighters are concerned. One of the elder statesmen, if you will, with so many great fighters coming out of that gym these days with, Curtis Blaydes and Drew Dober and Corey Sanhagen. Why are things going so well for you guys coming out of that gym? Justin Gaethje as well. Why are things going so well?
I think it's just the fact we're able to lean on each other and push one another. I think that's what's really been making a difference over the last couple of years here. To be able to train something in the gym and try it on one another and then have the other person go out there and actually execute in the fight gives us that much confidence in one another. It gives us that much confidence in our coaches. And I feel like this is just the beginning for Elevation Fight Team. I mean, our team has grown significantly over the last couple of years, and we've making significant strides in the UFC and MMA in general. So I'm really excited for the future of the team, really excited to see where we're going. And I couldn't be more proud to be with these men every single day.
Congratulations on the win, Neil. Really great stuff. Very impressive performance. Lee had looked so good in the UFC up until this point, was coming off a really impressive win in his own right. So really, really big stuff out of you. And welcome back, my man. I know it's been a crazy year and a half or so for you. Welcome back. And again, congratulations to you and your wife on the birth of Liam.
Awesome, dude. Thank you so much, man. It's great to be back. Great to be on the show. Hopefully we'll be able to do this here pretty soon if he has to answer that phone call.
Yes, sir. All right. We'll see what he has to say. Thank you so much to Neil Magny. Again, it's pretty amazing when you look at that wins stat that we just showed on the screen for the welterweight division. George St. Pierre, 19. Matt Hughes, 16. Neil Magny, 15. GSP, Matt Hughes, arguably the two greatest welterweights of all time, and he's third, one win away from tying Matt Hughes, four wins away from tying, in my opinion, the greatest of all time, George St. Pierre. Thiago Alva is no longer in the UFC. He has 15 as well, and Matt Brown has 15 too. So that is a huge, huge feather in his cap, and it's good to have him back, and I really like that fight against Michael Chiesa. Like I said, Chiesa seems into it, so we'll see if they get it done. Before we move along to our next guest, let me tell you right now about our good friends over at ZipRecruiter. Yes, we love ZipRecruiter. They're good people. As you take a look at the results from Saturday night. Oh, this is Brazilian music. I don't even have to ask, right? Because, of course, the UFC is going to Brasilia. Thank you very much to Isabel for this very cultured music. Yes, Kevin Lee versus Charles Oliveira. I'm very excited about that fight. Anyway, what? This is crazy. Who wrote this? TST? What if Yoel Romero forced the action on Saturday night and won 4 out of 5 rounds? We'd be having a very different conversation on today's show. 4 out of 5 is really good, isn't it? Wow, that was good stuff. Who wrote that? Anyway, well, now when you're hiring, you can fight at that level as well, because 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. I mean, this is top level stuff. Whoever wrote this deserves an Emmy. No matter the industry, healthcare to manufacturing to business services, ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster and easier. And today, you can try it for free over at ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for the right candidates to find you. No, ZipRecruiter has scouts that scour the entire country to find the right personnel for you. First, when you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job sites. Then, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right skills and experience, and invites them to apply to your job. So, you get qualified candidates fast. And I mean fast. And now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/MMA, and my viewers as well, or I should say our viewers, because it's not just a one-man band here. Everyone's involved. Anyway, that's ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Please support them because they support us. All right. Saturday night, big night for the sport, for the UFC. Of course, we had the middleweight title fight. We had the strawweight title fight, everyone buzzing over what happened in the co-main event, not so much in the main event, but those were two of the bigger stories. Perhaps the third biggest story is what allegedly happened between Brian Ortega, and our old pal Jay Park. You remember Jay Park, right? He joined us when the Korean Zombie was on the show about a month ago. We introduced him as Korean Zombie's translator, but he's much more than that. He's a Korean-American multi-platinum hip-hop artist. Man is one of many talents and very popular all over the world. Trust me, I've learned about this, especially since his last appearance on the show. Very talented, has many great talents, and is very, very popular all over the world, not just in Korea. And he was on the program, and unfortunately, Brian Ortega, and how do I know this? Well, he wrote about it on his social media on multiple occasions, was unhappy with some of the things that Jay Park had to say in the interview. But a reminder, he was translating for the things that the Korean Zombie was actually saying in the interview. In case you missed it, in case you may have forgotten about it, here's a quick reminder of that exchange from about a month ago on the program.
So he said, you know, it doesn't matter Holloway, Volkanovski, Ortega, but Ortega already ducked him one time. So he doesn't, you know, he doesn't need to fight a fighter that's ducking him already.
Dang. I didn't know Zombie had this in him. This is great stuff. This is some good trash talk.
I didn't know he had it in me either. This is the first time I'm seeing this. This is kind of crazy.
And so that's what happened on the program. This is what happened in the aftermath. Brian Ortega writing this: when I saw him in Korea, he apologized and said, sorry for the trash talk. And I said, all good, because at least you came at me like a man. Now you just expletive dog. Jay Park, welcome to the fight game. Don't be surprised if I slap the expletive out of you when I see you. Having an injury and ducking are two very different things. Jay Park then responded to Brian Ortega and said, don't shoot the messenger / translator. Can't blame the man for trying to shake expletive up and get a title shot. Plus, he got the performance to back it up. Respect you for pulling up to Korea for press, but it's Team Zombie all day. And then Brian Ortega responded to that comment and said, in acts of war, careful who you message for. Don't let me see you. As for Zombie, I'll see you too. So the Korean Zombie was in attendance on Saturday at T-Mobile Arena, as was Jay Park. They were there to watch UFC 248, and allegedly, according to a number of eyewitness accounts, there was a bit of an altercation. So we wanted to have Jay Park on the show to explain what happened from his point of view. And there he is. Jay Park now joining us as an actual guest on the program. Last time he was there in support of the Korean Zombie acting as his translator. Now he's the actual featured guest. Jay, thank you for doing this. How are you?
How you doing, Ariel?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks so much for coming on the show. And I do want to mention off the top that I also asked Brian Ortega for his side of the story on multiple occasions via text message, but he hasn't gone back to me. He responded on Saturday with just a haha. On Monday, he did not respond. So I want to make note of the fact that I asked him for his side. I wanted to get both sides of the story. But first, tell me what happened from your perspective. Can you tell us your side?
I mean, I was literally just, you know, very jet lagged because I just got in from Korea a couple of days ago. And so I was very jet lagged. You know, I don't feel like I did anything wrong. I just translated. I've never put words in Zombie's mouth. I've never put up a caption for him. I've never told him to trash talk. Like I have a lot of respect for fighters. You know, they, you know, put everything on the line. They train hard. They fight for their, you know, for their family. They put their bodies on the line for our entertainment and they fight for their families and stuff like that. So I have a lot of respect for fighters. And I was actually a fan of Brian Ortega. Like I followed him on Instagram. Like I was actually a fan of dude. I followed him after the Max Holloway fight and just, because of how much heart he showed. And so, like, but, you know, if he was to fight Zombie, of course, I'm Team Zombie. That's my guy. Like, that's my guy. So, of course, I'm going to root for Zombie. And so, when we did your show, I was just, of course, I'm a big fan of MMA. I know a lot about MMA. Also, you know, I was trying to bring more attention to Zombie, which is good for the featherweight division in general. You know, so it's good for Brian Ortega. So, I don't know what he was tripping about. He was getting mad for no reason. And then, so I didn't pay him no mind. He was there, cool. Like, but I was just chilling. I was just, you know, I was jet lagged, spacing out. And then when Zombie went to the bathroom, all of a sudden I see it's like someone like pull up and then they're like, he's like, hey dog, are you Jay Park? And it just kind of just caught me by surprise. And I was like, yeah. And as I stood up, he like smacked me. And like, as I was standing up, he smacked me. And so, you know, it was very narrow. It was very narrow. And so there was chairs behind me. And so I kind of fell back, and then I got up and I pushed him, and, you know, like whatever, there's like a little scuffle, whatever. And then people broke it up. But you know, it was just weird. It was just a very weird, awkward, like what, I don't know why I really don't know why he's mad at me. Like, he's supposed to be fighting zombie, but like, why? I don't know. It was just weird. It was just a weird situation.
Did he hurt you?
I mean, nah, I mean, no, I mean, it was like, you know, to be completely honest, you know, my jaw is a little stiff. But you know, nothing too serious. No, I mean, it's just weird. He's like the number two guy in the world. Like, he's a UFC professional fighter. Like, what is he doing coming and attacking me? Like, I could understand if I was talking shit, or if I was like, yo, yeah, or if I was egging him on or whatever, but I was a fan of the dude. Like, I was following him on Instagram. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, it was just a really bad representation of himself. Like, it was not a good look for him, bro.
And just to be clear, from the best of your knowledge, as far as I know, it happened very quickly. But as far as your memory tells you, like, was it an open hand slap or was it a punch? What do you remember?
No, it wasn't a punch. Okay. It was like a smack with his palm. You know.
Okay.
So I don't know. If he's really mad about the translation, I don't know what to tell him. Like, it was a translation. Like, you know, I don't know what to tell him. Like, if you're mad about that, yo, you got to get thicker skinned. Like, it wasn't even like some type of disrespectful, like, you know, he's talking about his family or anything. He was just, you know, it's like with the fight game, you know, like, if you're trying to kind of promote yourself, try to sell the fight, you know, you gotta make things interesting. And that's what Zombie was kind of lacking before. I mean, I've told him to be more vocal, but I've never told him to, you know, to say something or to, you know, whatever. I've never ever put words in his mouth. You know what I'm saying? So, and even the thing he posted yesterday, I didn't translate that for him. You know what I'm saying? Like, he has a manager in the States. He has a fight camp in the States. Like, you know, like there's people that can, you know, translate. He has a lot of people that translate stuff for him, but it's what he wants to say. He never put words in his mouth.
Yeah, and we're showing that message yesterday, and I saw some of the comments were like, oh, Jay wrote this for him. He would never speak like that. But you're saying you had nothing to do with this lengthy statement that he posted on social media yesterday. And this came from him. Like, obviously, someone's translating it for him, but he's well aware of what is being written here. This all came from him, you're saying?
Of course. We're not like puppet masters. Like, we don't want to tell somebody, like, we don't ever want to put words in somebody's mouth, because, you know, we want him to be him. You know, we want him to be authentic. We want him to be real. Like, we don't want him to be some kind of character. Like, he doesn't need to do that. Like, of course, he's being more vocal now and he sees the reaction. I think yesterday was not even for reaction. It was just what he's really feeling. But when it comes to, you know, when he being on your show and you know, trying to get tried to kind of get Volkanovski's attention and the UFC's attention, yeah, he'll be more vocal, but it's not something that we're telling him to do, or I don't even know his password. Like, I don't know his,
right?
You know? So yeah, I don't know. It's weird, because one of my homies sent me an interview that he had done last year. And so he was like, yeah, Korean Zombie's, he's not really a trash talker, but, you know, I heard he signed to some guy like Jay, whatever. And, you know, ever since then, I think he's writing stuff for him. So I think somebody or the fans or something, he has this false narrative in his mind that I'm the one, like, you know, like on Zombie's IG, or I'm the one, like, you know, being the puppet master behind Zombie, but is not, like, and so it's just very weird, very, very weird, very just corny that he just kind of like came out of nowhere and just attacked me. It was just weird. It just doesn't make any sense at all.
And I'm sure you've gone back to that original interview that drew his ire. I obviously don't speak Korean, but do you stand by the translation? Because I've seen other people say that, oh, you didn't translate it 100% like what he said. You threw in your – was that an accurate translation of what Zombie said?
So Ariel, so he said, okay, like, you know, Ortega already pulled out. So I don't know if I someone that already pulled out, which basically means like, yo, like, you know, like he said it in like a mischievous way. So okay. Like when I, when I got that, you know, when I heard that, I translated like, oh yeah, he's ducking him. Like he pulled out. Like, you know, if I mistranslated, I apologize. That's my bad. I'm not a professional translator. You know, I was doing it to bring more attention to Zombie to, you know, and to just, and plus I'm a fan of the show. You know, I watch the show every week, man. So that's why I wanted to be on it. If I mistranslate, that's my bad. But you know, it's still like, it wasn't what I was trying to put in his mouth. Like that's what he was insinuating. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I was just trying to translate to the best of my ability, basically.
After the altercation, do you remember what happened? I've seen a couple of videos where it seemed like Ortega was escorted out. Do you know what happened there?
Yeah, I guess he got, you know, escorted out, whatever. And then, you know, and then Zombie came back from the bathroom with his wife. And yeah, I mean, and then they're like, what happened? And I was just like, I was mad at the time. I'm not really mad anymore, but I was very mad I was angry at the time. I was just like I was mad at the time. And then, you know, he was like, oh, like what happened? Da, da, da. And then, yeah, basically, you know, the UFC staff, came over and they're like, you want to press charges, you know? And at the time, like after I calmed down a little, I was like, nah, whatever. It is what it is. Like, nah, I don't want to press charges. But, you know, at like Zombie's team and his wife were like, no, we can't let him get away with this, you know? And so they're like, you got to press charges. So yeah, I mean, I spoke to the police. And you know, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Like, we'll see how this plays out to see if I actually go through pressing charges or not. We'll see how it goes.
Okay, so where does that stand right now? It's up to you as far as whether or not you're going to go through with it, or you did in fact press charges.
No. So it's. I think they filed a report, okay. And then I think it's up to me whether I go through with it or not. You know what okay. I'm saying? So, yeah. I mean, I don't. People are like, are you going to sue him? Like, no, I'm not gonna. I don't want to take this dude's money, or I don't want him to go to jail or anything like that. You know, I don't wish nothing bad about him, but it was just. It was just really weird. Like, I have no other way to put it. Like, you know, it's just, I don't know what he's thinking. Like, he needs to get his act together. Like real talk. Like, that was reminiscent of, and not to throw shade at Conor McGregor, but it was like literally like how when Conor punched the old dude at the pub, like that didn't do anything. Like, it was literally like one of those situations. Like, I was literally like jet lag spacing out. Like, and then he was like, hey dog, are you Jay Park? Like on some like very high school type energy. It was weird.
Did you see him the rest of the night at all?
No, I did not. Okay. You know, like, you know, I would have never thought like, I of course he like, you know, threatened me in the comments and whatever. But you know, I was literally the translator. Like I didn't know that he was going to like wait till Zombie left and he was plotting and scheming like, to come and do something to me. I went to the fight, UFC 248, because Zombie was like, yo, I'm going to go. Like, you know, I know you're going to LA for some meetings. Do you want to come and you know, watch the fights? And I was like, yeah. He's like, yo, Brian Ortega is going to be there. I was like, all right, cool. Like, you know, I whatever. You know, I didn't really pay no mind to it. Like, I wasn't like, oh my God, is he going to do something to me? Da da da. Because I felt like I really did nothing wrong. I literally mm-hmm. was actually trying to help in some ways. I'm actually trying to help him, like, you know, to bring more attention to the featherweight division, to the fights. Like the more attention this gets, the bigger the bag gets, the more money you get. So what are you mad about? You know? Mm-hmm. So I didn't know he was going to like actually try to like cause physical harm to me, you know, a non fighter. Like I'm a singer, bro. I weigh 143 pounds. Like, I'm like 40 pounds lighter than this dude. Like, he's the UFC number two guy in the world. What are you doing? Like, it doesn't make you look tough. It was just weird. It was very, very weird.
What was Zombie's reaction when you told him when he came back to the seat?
He was just like, man, he was just mad. He was just like, after a while, like, everybody around me is more mad than I am. Like, right now I'm just like, you know, I have bigger things to worry about. Then, you know, I have, you know, a lot of responsibility. I have a lot of people I need to care for. I have a lot of businesses I need to take care of, tend to. So I'm not worried about some UFC guy's feelings. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. It's just not one of my priorities. But, you know, Zombie was very mad. He was just like, oh, my God, I can't believe he would do that. Like, is he just like a trying to be like a thug? Or what is he trying to do? You know, it's like it was not professional at all. I don't know. It was just the weirdest situation. Like, if he was doing it for attention, I could understand. Okay, that's cool. Like, it worked. But if you're going to do it for attention, if you guys were plotting this for attention, have your manager film it and put up the footage. Like, that. Like, it happened so quickly, nobody could even take video, you know? So.
Wow. Yeah, very, very unfortunate. And again, reached out to him to get his side, but he did not get back to me. I'm just curious. One thing that was just brought up a lot in the aftermath of this was the fact that Zombie went to the bathroom when it happened. Do you get the feeling that he waited for that, or was it just bad timing on your part that Zombie wasn't there?
Well, so what I heard from, you know, Zombie's, one of other Zombie's managers, Jason, he told me that, like, Brian and his manager were, like, looking at me, like looking at me for, like staring me down or whatever. Again, I was not paying it no mind, because I would never in a million years think that, like, because I'm not, like, a trash talker. I'm not a disrespectful dude. Like, I respect all the fighters. Like, I have the highest respect for all the fighters. Like, they put their lives on the line for, you know, the families and for our entertainment. So I would have never thought in a million years that someone would come, like a fighter would come attack me, you know? So, yeah, like, apparently, like, that's what, you know, one of his managers said. He's like, yo, he definitely waited till Zombie went to the bathroom to come and attack me, basically.
Hmm. So just to be very clear, as of right now, you have not pressed charges and you're still deciding on whether or not you're going to continue. Because I think there was a tweet last night from Jason, which kind of implied that charges had already been, filed on your behalf. But just to be clear, you have not done that and are still deciding whether or not you're going to, right?
No. To be honest, I don't know the process. Like, I haven't really spoke to the police like that. I don't know the process of, like, you know, if I speak to the police, if they file the charges or whatever, I don't know. But they filed a report, and then, yeah, I guess from what I've heard, it's up to us whether we go through it or not. So, I mean, we'll see how this plays out. You know, if he's like, oh yeah, like I slapped you, bro, like blah, 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 like then maybe, you know, like, but I don't know. We'll see how it plays out.
Okay. Right now, are you leaning in one direction or the other, or you're just kind of indifferent at the moment?
Nah, I mean, to be honest, I don't know. I don't know where he's, how he's feeling right now. Like, if it was just for attention, then to be honest, it's good. Like, all right, cool. Like, I'll take it on the chin for Zombie. Like, it builds up the fight, cool. But if he's really just mad about the translation, I don't know. He needs to reassess his life. Like, that's not it. It's just not it. It's just, yeah, he needs to reassess his life. I'm sure, you know, that he has like I do. I have a lot of people right now that are just very mad that, like, you know, that look up to me or that, you know, I need to put on for. I'm sure he has the same. Like, you know, I've seen him, you know, at the open workouts, you know, bring his little brother up. And, you know, I thought that was cool. Like, I really had respect for the dude. And, you know, I'm sure he has a lot of people that he's representing, that he puts on for, that he needs to represent right. And that right there was not a good representation of himself or his people. Like, he needs to, you know, like he needs to play chess, not checkers. Like, what if I had, like, people with me and he would have got injured, then he wouldn't be able to fight, you know? And that's not good on his part. Or what if he loses endorsements on this, like, attack or whatever? Like, it's not good on his part. You know, I don't wish this dude any, like, bad harm or whatever. Like, I don't want anybody to do anything malicious on my behalf. Yeah, I mean, you know, if it builds up the fight and him and Zombie end up fighting, that's cool. It's still Team Zombie. I'm wearing the Zombie hoodie right there. It's still Team Zombie all day. I think Zombie will finish him maybe in, like, the third round, you know? So,
maybe on a positive note, let's end on this. Was that your first UFC event that you went to, or did you go to Zombie's last fight in December?
No, so I went to the one in Denver when he fought Yair.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, and then I also went to the one when he fought Edgar. I mean, you know, I
old hat for you.
So I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, it's after, you know, I started working with Zombie. I go to support him, and you know, when I post stuff on my Instagram about Zombie, like congratulating on his win or whatever, I'm still like Speedy Recovery Moicano or Speedy Recovery Frankie Edgar, because I have a lot of respect for these guys, man. I really do. And so it was just very disappointing just for that to happen and for like that dude to do that. Cause I was low key like a fan, and I was like rooting for him, you know, like not against Zombie, but just like in life, I guess. You know?
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, I could tell you're a very genuine fan. You're a big fan of the sport, and you never want to be involved in something like that. I kind of feel like now, you know, they have a history. I would imagine the team wants this fight now. I don't want you to speak on Zombie's behalf, but I would imagine that he wants to kind of fight him now more so than ever.
Well, I mean, of course, Zombie wants the title shot.
Yeah.
And I think it's well-deserved, because, you know, who else has the performances like Zombie, and you know, he's been doing this for a while, and I think right now he's at his peak. So I think, you know, he wants a title fight. I want him to get a title fight. But if not, you know, if they do that Volkanovski Holloway rematch, then yeah, of course, like, you know, Ortega's the number two guy, Zombie's number four. You know, they should, you know, run that, and that should be like the number one contender match.
Yeah, and I'm glad to see that his eye surgery was a success, right? He's okay after that.
Yes, it's, you know, he said he has some stitches in his eye, and it feels like there's sand in there, but he says he could see very clearly now. So
okay, that's great to hear. Jay, I really appreciate you doing this. I know it wasn't a very fun evening, or at least didn't turn out to be a fun evening for you and the team, but I appreciate you coming on and telling your side of the story. Obviously, a lot of intrigue and interest in this, and I've started to listen to a lot of your music. I like it, my man. I'm a fan. I enjoy your product, so keep it up.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you, Brian Ortega, for getting me on the Ariel Helwani show, man. Shout out to you, bro.
All right. Thank you, Jay. All the best to you. There he is.
All right, Team Zombie, man.
There he is. Peace, Jay Park, kind enough to join us talking about what happened on Saturday night. And again, I've tried to ask Brian, who I have a lot of respect for as well, his side of the story, but I've not heard back from him. Not sure if we will hear back. He just celebrated his birthday as well very recently. So we'll see what happens there. And by the way, happy birthday to Dominic Cruz. I did, in fact, confirm that, yes, I do want to see it. I confirmed that today is, in fact, his birthday. In fact, you will remember back in September, I think it was September, I totally botched my happy birthday to him. Here's a reminder. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Where's the birthday boy? Happy birthday, my dear Dominic. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
Thank you, Ariel. Yes, it is my birthday, but it's not my birthday all at the same time.
I forgot the lighter. My bad. I screwed that up. Yes, because you're saying it's already past midnight in Abu Dhabi. Is that what you're saying?
No, because my birthday is March 9th, Ariel.
What? What are you talking about? I thought it was September 3rd.
No, that's on Wikipedia because somebody was messing with the Wikipedia.
One of the low moments of my career. Never trust Wikipedia. Never. I think Valentina Shevchenko's birthday was on Saturday. We will confirm with her later in the program. Actually, we'll confirm with her in a matter of seconds, because she is coming up next. But yes, that was a low moment in my career. And I did confirm with Dom that, in fact, today is his birthday. So happy birthday to him. Corey Sanhagen, by the way, angling for a title eliminator against Dominic Cruz in San Diego in May. We know that Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker is going to be the main event. Right now, it seems as though there's not a lot of interest there, but we'll see how that one turns out. That would be a fun fight. Also, Marlon Moraes versus Piotr Jan was announced for June. All kinds of fights were announced last week. Curtis Blaydes, Alexander Volkov. One that I would like to see announced in the not-too-distant future, the Korean Zombie versus Brian Ortega. After what happened on Saturday, I say that is a fight that has to happen. And now, without further ado, let us say hello to one of the best fighters on the planet today, the great Valentina Shevchenko, kind enough to join us from New York City. Valentina, how are you?
Doing good, doing very good. It's very beautiful weather now in New York. We just went to a little walk to the pier, and it's gorgeous. Enjoying my day here.
I'm glad to hear that. Now, before we actually continue with the interview, I have to say this to you, Valentina. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, my dear Valentina. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Ariel. Thank you.
And I want to say this, Tulgan Kunin Menen.
Tulganku, it's correct. Yes, now you speak Kyrgyz.
Yes, that means happy birthday, right?
Tulgan kunun menin.
All right, there you go.
It means happy birthday.
Not bad for my first time speaking.
Very good.
How did you celebrate your birthday in New York City? Because you were in New York when it was your birthday on Saturday, right?
Yes. So in the morning, I had appearance hanging out with fans. It was very interesting, fan meeting with MMA fans and wrestling fans. So my morning started like this, and then it was just going around to see a little bit more of New York. But I would say that official celebration is gonna happen when we go back to Las Vegas, and we going join all my family, my sister, and we will have the official celebration.
And by the way, when you said that you were with the wrestling fans at this convention on Saturday, you mean like the pro wrestling fans, right?
I mean, yes.
Yes. They're a little funny, those pro wrestling fans, aren't they? They're a little bit different than the MMA fans, right?
You know, yes, they are different, and it's this is amazing that to see, because they are I used to see MMA fans, and now it's different, pro wrestling. They have different spirit, and this is amazing thing that you can compare and see there how it's working all together, combining.
Yeah, and it's great to see you start to get respect from that world and outside of the MMA world as well. Now, I wanted to ask you, before we talk about what's next for you, I wanted to ask you about Saturday night. Zhang Weili against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. You know Joanna very well. Maybe one of the greatest fights that we've ever seen, regardless of gender. What did you think of the fight? Did you enjoy it? Did you think it was as great as everyone else said it was?
I think, yes, it was very entertaining fight to watch. And both ladies, they give everything that they had to win the for the victory of this fight. And definitely it was very good fight between two strong female fighters. Yeah, of course, I think it took a lot of character. And to finish, to go all these five rounds. And I think the MMA community, fan community of mixed martial arts, they enjoyed watching this fight.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I saw on Twitter you retweeted a tweet from Conor McGregor. You actually thought Joanna won the fight, correct?
Actually, yes, it's true. I thought that Joanna was better in this fight, and she had more, Weili, she just went forward, and she didn't had to strike. And actually, it was a competition of who had stronger head, who has stronger shin. So, in my opinion, right, it's what is the art of martial arts? What is the, what you have to show for the fans? You have to show your skill, your skill to damage your opponent and not getting these hits, not receiving any. This is the pure martial arts. If you don't have enough, not power, but arms, I mean, enough technique, what you have to do, just go forward and hit. it's easy. Like, it's easy. So you just, like, do what you can. But when you have more in your arsenal, more arts, more arms, you can, for example, not only hit, but also you can choose any technique. You can spin, you can go wrestling, you can go, like, down, like, whatever. And this is, in my opinion, that this is true definition of martial arts.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, would it be fair to say that you weren't all that impressed with Zhang in this fight?
All impressed? You know, like, she did good. She did good. She's strong. But you could see once she start, like, get the real competition, the real level of martial artists, the top level fighters, the top level of opponents, now she has this struggle. You could see how difficult was this fight with Joanna, her fight, how difficult it was. And I really don't see Weili defending her belt in the next title fight.
Really? So you think she loses? Regardless of maybe if it's Rose or Jessica Andrade, you think whoever she fights, she loses?
I think most likely it's going to be Rose
okay.
for the next fight.
And you think Rose
yes.
is better than her?
You could tell by yourself how difficult this fight was with Joanna. In my opinion, Joanna won this fight because she was more, her accuracy was more on point. And yes, she get this like inflammation on her head, but it was just one punch. It was the fault of just one punch. If it wouldn't be that, like, I think it was third round. Yes, I think it was third round. If it wouldn't be that punch, it wouldn't be that so much swelling in her face.
Now, if you were to fight Zhang, like, when you watch her fight, how would you attack her? What would be the game plan?
Oh, I would like to fight anyone. For me, there is no problem to fight, like, whoever comes, I'm here. I'm gladly fight her. And, I don't see any difficulties in this fight.
Well, it's funny that you say that because last Wednesday I spoke to her manager, Brian Butler, on my show, and I was talking to him about what could be next after the Ioana fight. This is before the Ioana fight, but we were talking about what could be next. And out of nowhere, he actually brought you up. I want to play you this clip and then get your reaction to what he had to say, okay?
Okay.
All right,
okay.
Here you go. Here's Brian Butler.
That also that we are very interested in, very, very interested in, would be a super fight with Weili and Valentina.
At 125.
Yes. I'm not sure if you saw the picture of them together at the PI this past week, but I don't think size is going to be a huge issue. I think it's just a very exciting stylistic matchup. If all goes well for Valentina and for Weili coming up, I think that's one that the fans would love to see.
So what do you think of that, Valentina?
And not surprising me at all, because I think her manager, he was like planning this matchup, like it's his probably dream of this matchup a while ago. But you're saying that it was this interview, it was before the fight, right?
Correct. Yes. Last Wednesday.
So I think after this fight, they would change their mind.
Oh, my gosh. Really? They want nothing to do with you, you're saying?
No, it's like, it's because now they can feel what is the real competition, because all these opponents that was before, they are different. They are so different and more like this picture, what you are showing right now. So I was training in UFCPI doing my stuff with Antonina, and her team, Weili, they come and they asked me to take a picture with them. So of course I did this picture with them, of course, yes. And, all other opponent, it was not that level, the high level of competition. But now, once she's in there, she's in real competition, in real top level. They feel how difficult it is. They really feel what it means, the real level of competition, the real level of MMA fighters.
By the way, when you were at the PI together, did you do any training together or just the picture?
No. No. It was just a picture. I did my training by myself because right now my sister Antonina, she's starting to prepare to her fight. She's going to fight in UFC Lincoln in April 25th. Mm-hmm. So we are slowly starting to get in the rhythm, to get in the shape. And I have to prepare myself as well because I'm her major training partner, so I have to be ready to give everything from me, all the power, to make her feel good in the training camp and to help her in her preparation as well. So I'm slowly starting my training as well, my training camp as well.
By the way, did you feel like they were like spying on you or eyeing you down or sizing you up? Did you feel that way?
You know, at this point when it's like last training before your fight, you're actually not thinking a lot about other like fighters, because you are so focusing on what is waiting for you in next Saturday. That's why you have all attention on yourself. It's like what usually I feel when I train in. But everything that I did in UFC PI that time, it's like shadow boxing, running, it's not much you can take from it.
Fair enough. And by the way, did you, I'm actually somewhat colorblind, Valentina, if I may admit that on the show here, but did you change the hair color back to blonde?
It's not back to blonde. Okay. It's kind of a middle. It's not that dark as it was, but it's still kind another shade of red.
Oh, okay.
But it's still like strawberry blonde.
Oh, okay.
It's
all
a
right.
little bit reddish.
I like, we're going back, we're moving slowly back to the old hair color. I see a different shade of... No?
I don't know how it's going to be back to blonde already, that blonde that I were before. But for now, I'm keeping kind of in the middle.
Okay, fair enough. And by the way, I'm just curious, because you are such a great fighter and you're so smart when it comes to fighting. Did you watch the main event? And if so, who'd you blame for a fight like that? Because it actually reminded me a lot of your fight between you and Liz Carmouche in August of last year, right? Because the challenger didn't bring the fight to the champion. When you see that, who do you blame in that scenario?
You know, I'm not blaming no one in this case, because there is like two fighters. If you are speaking about Yoel Romero, he understand good what his opponent waiting from him, what Israel wants from his all opponent. He wants them move a lot, to do things like throwing punches, kicks, whatever. What for? To make them mistake. And he needs this movement to adjust his own game to hit like the strike, the unique strike, strong, powerful strike. He needs this move. This is his like fight. This is his game. But Yoel knows this. What he did, he didn't throw himself in this game plan. He did his like fight plan. He followed his strategy. He just went in defensive, like fighting style, and waiting for that moment when to hit one straight hook. Of course, he knew that if he will play under rules of Israel, it would not be like a good, good fight for him. That's why he decided to play his own game. And in this situation, you could see that Israel was a little bit like, without knowing what to do, how to adjust himself, and because he needs this action, he needs this movement around. That's why, I think, yes, probably it was not that thing that when you are without thinking, just going forward and fighting, another one just throwing another punches. So from one side, it's like entertained to watch for the fans, but there is no, martial arts in this. It's like just fight. Anyone can fight. But in this fight game of both of the fighters, I would see a lot of like strategy plans. And of course, it was very hard and very difficult for both, because the level of competition, it's very high. It's top level.
All right. So next up for you, Valentina, and I appreciate that insight very much. June 6th in Perth, it is going to be Joanne Calderwood. When you were given her as your opponent, were you happy with that? Do you like this challenge, fighting JoJo?
Yes. June 6th in Perth, it's a great place to have the fight, and we visited Australia last year. We spent there 1 month, and we visited Sydney, Adelaide, Perth, and Tasmania. It's very gorgeous places. One of my favorites is Perth because of their beaches, their nature, and Tasmania. And I'm very happy that now we are go back there, coming back and having this huge event of UFC. And of course, when they brought up the name of Jojo, I knew that because I was offering before this like one opportunity to fight her, and kind of I was ready to take this fight. So I think she's good. She has good style. She's an MMA fighter. And as I said, I don't care who fight next. Yes. I'm ready for anyone.
So when you consider your recent opponents, you know, the likes of Caitlin Chookagian and Jessica Ai, Liz Carmouche, where do you put her? How difficult is this matchup for you, Joanne, compared to some of your other recent opponents in title fights?
You know, Ariel, for me, there is no just like that simple measurement, that simple scale where you put your opponent, how difficult she is, because for me, the difficulty of the opponent, it's not just in a person. It's all combining together, the preparation, how you felt during preparation. Because, you know, sometimes if you are not in the right mindset, if you are not in the right, if you don't have right power and dedication for your training, your performance will be poor. Even against an opponent that they are considering that, like, not that or something, or I don't know why, but this is my thoughts. There is no easy opponents. You have to prepare yourself in the best shape, in the best, like, power as you can. That's why, probably the fight would be easier than you are thinking. And, of course, it's not only about the opponent. It's more about yourself, how you prepare yourself for the fight.
Last thing for you, Valentina, you know, a week after that fight on June 6th in Perth, the UFC is going to Kazakhstan for the first time. And I thought if they went to Kazakhstan, they would go with you headlining because it's close to where you're from in Kyrgyzstan. Are you disappointed that you're not on the Kazakhstan card?
Not at all. I really happy this opportunity fighting in Australia, and we have still a lot of time going forward. And you know, I would say I would be disappointed if the fight would happen in Kyrgyzstan, in my country.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
But in this case, I'm glad that they will do it. And I understand it's kind of like risky for them to put like title fights, the main fight straight in the country that they didn't like do any events yet. So probably the first one, it's kind of like to measure and to see how it's going to be. So let's see what's going to happen after this event for the next one. But I'm very happy that I'm fighting in Australia right now, like June 6th. And I just will prepare myself and do, as always, to put everything the best of me to give the good performance.
Valentina, pleasure to talk to you as always. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Again, happy birthday to you. Enjoy your time in New York and good luck in preparation, not just for your fight in June, but for Antonina's fight coming up in April as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ariel. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Always a pleasure to talk to Valentina Shevchenko. She's getting really good at those interviews. And I really think that her breakdown of the main event was fascinating. Co-main event was very interesting as well. And in a matter of moments, we are going to be joined by one of the women we just spoke to her about, Zhang Weili, the reigning defending UFC women's strawweight champion. And of course, as I just said, Valentina is returning to action on June 6th in Perth, Australia. No main event yet for that particular card. You saw Alexander Volkanovsky on Saturday. They did the old split screen with Max Holloway, who was also in attendance. Big weekend for Max Holloway. He went to Invicta in Kansas on Friday, did a little scouting for some open scoring talk that he's been very into these days. And then he went to Las Vegas for UFC 248. So they did the split screen, and initially I thought, all right, this is the way that they are going to announce this fight, but they didn't. But it does seem as though all roads lead to that rematch happening on June 6th. Korean Zombie kind of ruled himself out with the eye surgery, and there's no one really else out there. You know, there's not a lot of momentum surrounding Zabit Magomedsharipov, and Holloway's the biggest name available and was the champion for several years, so they're going to run that one back. But we did speak to Alexander Volkanovsky on Friday during our official weigh-in show, and he said the hand is feeling better. He's doing some grappling now and has been cleared and wants to fight on that card. Obviously, it would make all the sense in the world to have him fight on that card. And so that's coming up in essentially 3 months' time, a little less than 3 months in Perth. That will be the main event if it actually gets finalized. The main event for the May 9th card, of course, we know by now, Henry Cejudo against Jose Aldo. Co-main event was announced late last week. Felicia Spencer is, in fact, going to get that title shot against Amanda Nunes. Credit to Amanda Nunes for taking the fight, for saying she wants to be a fighting champion, if you will, fighting at 145 and 135. And also, congratulations to both her and Nina Ansaroff on the upcoming birth of their child in September. They announced this last week. They're expecting. That's great news. All right. Speaking of fighting champions, holy smokes, Zhang Weili is everything that a fighting champion should be and a heck of a lot more. What a performance on Saturday. What a fight. What a back and forth battle that was with Yuania and Jacek. Here's a quick reminder of what went down Saturday night in Las Vegas.
Zhang Weili and Yuania Jacek turned in what is ubiquitously now regarded as the greatest singular fight in women's mixed martial arts history.
I knew that fight was going to be incredible. Both of these women are incredibly talented, both incredibly hungry. They both want that belt.
Oh my God, the heart and the toughness was on display from both these women tonight. I mean, they beat the brakes off of each other. I live for this. I said to everybody that was around me, I said, this is why we love this sport.
I'm really happy for both of them, proud of them, and it's the fight of the year.
Indeed, if something surpasses that fight, if another fight surpasses that fight, you know it's going to be a great year. That has to be the front runner, at least as of right now. It is early, but that has to be the front runner for fight of the year, and not just female fight of the year, period. And I can't remember the last time a women's MMA fight won the award for fight of the year. That's how good this fight was. Everyone's saying afterwards that it was the greatest women's fight in UFC history. You can certainly make the case that it's the greatest women's title fight in UFC history, surpassing Miesha Tate and Holly Holm, and now you can make the case, in my opinion, that's one of the greatest title fights, period. It happened on Saturday, and now it is an honor to be joined by the reigning defending champion, Zhang Weili, who's kind enough to join us via the magic of FaceTime. Zhang, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. How are you feeling? How are you feeling on this Monday after the fight?
I feel very good. I feel very good. 我终于可以休息了. I'm right.
So eventually that I can take a rest, take a break now.
Yes, and Tommy, thank you for joining us. Don't be so shy. You can come in the camera shot if you want as well. You're a legend too, Tommy.
Okay.
thank you.
Any serious injuries after the fight, Zhang? After the fight on Saturday, any serious injuries?
有没有什么严重的伤？
No. 只有那个脸上一点点。Just cut on the face and swallow on the eyes.
Okay.
Oh, and the foot.
Right. Have you had a chance to rewatch the fight yet?
你回看比赛了吗？没有。Not yet.
因为我觉得发挥的不太好。
Well, because I didn't think I put my best performance, so I didn't watch the fight yet.
Why not? What were you unhappy with?
哦，the first two rounds, I was kind of like playing her game, so I lost my tempo and lost my pace. Then start from the third round, started getting back to me. I found my own pace, and I found my own pace. Then Joanna was such a great, great opponent, and she's been to my imaginary opponent for a long time. I was waiting for this fight. I was looking forward to this fight for a long time. Eventually, we made it, and I won. I'm so happy about it.
Was she tougher than you expected her to be? The shots that you landed were incredible, and she kept on coming and wasn't, you know, dropped or looked to be close to being finished. Were you surprised by how tough she was? Did that surprise you?
然后, oh yes, she is so tough. She's not only mentally tough, physically she's tough, and also she took a lot of my shots, and I think she's a great fighter. She's a warrior.
Mm. 比赛的前一天晚上我还没有就是不能睡好一个整觉，一直醒，然后两天大概睡了六七个小时吧，一天就平均四五个小时。我在北京的时候每天就大概都要十个小时，11个小时睡眠，但是来到美国的时候我一时差一直就是过不来，所以就感觉特别迟钝，所以我觉得这次发挥不好，所以我也就没敢看那个视频，对。
Right, I didn't put my best performance on because I haven't really acclimatized at all here in Vegas. I've been traveling like 3-4 different places for this fight, and kept acclimatizing the time zone, and I had only like 3 to 5 hours a day sleeping. Normally I slept like 9 to 10 hours in Beijing, but here in Vegas, I couldn't get a full night's sleep. So I didn't get the best of me. I didn't get the best performance. That's why I don't want to look that fight yet.
I understand that, and I appreciate you saying that. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Right. And only slept 6 hours totally for the 2 days before the fight.
Wow. You know, you said all the right things.
6 hours in 2 days, yeah.
Right. You said all the right things, Weili, going into the fight about dealing with the stress of the travel and everything going on back home. But now that it's over, can you admit that maybe it was too much to handle, and perhaps do you regret taking the fight? Because going from Thailand to Abu Dhabi to Las Vegas within a month prior to your first title defense is just a lot for anyone to deal with. Now that it's over, do you look back and say maybe that was just too much for me?
你说的就是一直在去满足了奔波啊，为这个比赛，然后呢又从泰国、阿布扎迪又到这儿这么着，三个地方了去转了，三四个地方了转转，然后你现在反正实现这个了已经，然后回头看一下的话，是不是感觉这个压力太大了？就是不应该接这个。其实回头想想，说实话太累了，我真的是一直靠自己的信念，然后来支撑着，然后一直。 靠自己的就是信念，然后支撑着自己。我从北京离开2月1号一直到现在，我没有休息过一天。然后周六日，然后转到一个新的地方，然后就开始紧接这块训练，一天都没有休息过。但是我觉得这个事儿，我虽然非常辛苦，但是我觉得非常值得，因为我觉得这也是我人生非常非常精彩的一部分。Right,
looking back to this trip, it's really tough and tiring. It's tiring. It's hard for me. 别跟我说了，我有点忘了，我又忘了。您在边上说。So yes, looking back, really tough for me, but I just made it. I feel like it's a great experience for me, and I feel like really, really nurtured. 然后说什么？我是忘了。您跟我说，我就打断我思路了。Sorry, Helwani, I have to ask her again. Sorry, I just
no problem.
Didn't remember. 然后你说什么？别再跟我说，我忘了。我就是说我就是。
就是虽然非常辛苦，但是我从来没有后悔，然后就感觉像梦一样，然后也实现了，对。It
was a tough trip, but I never feel regret. So it was kind of like a dream, but I just made it. I made it happen.
Have you had a chance to see all the comments, especially from your fellow fighters about this fight, people calling it one of the greatest fights ever in the history of the UFC? And if so, how do you feel when you hear that?
有没有机会看一下其他的运动员对你这场比赛的评价，然后你的感受是怎么样？我现在还没有看，然后我手机从比赛前就一直就是被那个蔡哥拿着，然后还没有来得及看那个就是外网的那个评价。
I didn't get a chance to look at anything yet because My phone was capped by Coach Tai before the fight. So I just got my phone back.
Wait, he took your phone away?
Yeah, the phone was capped by Coach Tai before the fight.
Why?
So she just got the phone back.
Why did he take it away?
为什么他把那个手机带走了？因为就担心我看了很多东西会有压力啊，然后会有很多就是精力分散。He worries about the distraction from the social media.
Wow, how long before the fight does he take it away?
比赛前多长时间就开始把手机拿走了？ More than a month.
Oh my gosh, you didn't have your phone for a month? That's incredible. Wow, I'm impressed.
晚上睡觉前的时候，就得把手机就收走了。然后白天的时候有一点时间就看手机。 She had the phone in the daytime for Instagram, for social media, but before she went to bed, Coach Tai would take the phone.
Right. And when you got your phone back, did you have a ton of messages waiting for you, people showering you with praise and congratulations?
什么时候把那个手机拿回来的，然后有没有收到很多的这些祝贺的信息，什么时候？我收到了非常非常多的那个祝贺信息，然后我都看不过来了，所以我不能一一回复，然后还有就是涨了很多粉丝。
So I got my phone back right after the fight. I received like tons of messages with congratulations, big congrats. I don't really have time to reply each one independently. And I also got like tons of fans following me after the fight. So I appreciated that. I want to say thank you to all my fans. And say sorry about couldn't just message you guys back easily.
I understand that when you went to the hospital, Ioana was somewhat near you at the hospital as well. Did you interact with her at all? Did you speak to her after the fight at the hospital?
在医院的时候，你跟乔娜就是两人隔张帘嘛，然后你们俩交谈了吗？交谈了，然后他跟我说，他说你要继续卫冕，会看着你，然后。
Oh yes, we had a talk and Ioana encouraged me and to keep defending, and the future will be more tough. So I really appreciate that. And she's such a warrior. She's a great fighter.
Even though you won the fight, because it was so great, do you suspect at some point, if you remain champion for a long time, that you will meet her again, that you will fight her again?
说赢了这个比赛了，然后你想没想过说有一天有可能再跟他再打二战？如果有机会的话，可以。Yeah, if possible. Yeah, it's possible.
Okay.
We have the opportunity to fight again.
Would you like to do that next, or do you think that you should give an opportunity to another fighter to fight for the belt?
下一站你是想跟他二战，还是想换一个的？我现在还没有考虑，因为我现在太久没有休息了。然后从我上次拿了冠军以后到现在，一直就没有好好的有自己的一个假期。我现在就想好好想出来我这个休息的时间，然后等我休息完假期以后，我再考虑跟谁打。So
I did not think about it yet because, since I won the title, I didn't got a vacation. I didn't got a holiday. I was just training all day long, all the time, and
now I just want to relax. I want to just have a vacation. Then I can think about who comes next.
That is understandable. Are you able to go home, or do you have to stay in America for a certain amount of time? How soon are you able to go back to your family in China?
你现在是要准备立刻回到中国呢，还是说要在这儿待一段时间再回国？我在这儿会待上大概一周多的时间吧，然后经纪人就是刚可能会帮我安排一些，还没起。So I'll keep staying here for about a week or so because my manager Brian Butler is gonna arrange a media for me here in the U.S.
Okay, and then are you able to go back to China?
然后能够直接完事儿，能直接回去吗？就是疫情的原因，这事儿吧。可以直接回去。现在中国越来越好了，然后现在已经很多地方都清零了，也非常安全。现在。
Oh yeah, I will fly back to China straight because China is much safer now, and it's safe. Yeah.
Okay. And that is great to hear. And we're showing a photo of you and your team meeting with UFC President Dana White and the UFC's General Counsel Hunter Campbell yesterday. He's in the photo as well. Could you tell us what this meeting was about and what you guys discussed? What was the end goal of the meeting?
昨天咱们去UFC总部，然后见了白大拿了，开了个会，能不能给大家简单的说说那个会说的是什么，关于什么内容的？
会说的就是让我好好训练，然后打漂亮的比赛，然后让更多人喜欢我。
Oh, Dana encouraged me to keep working hard and keep fighting hard and attract more people, more fans.
Okay. Did you guys talk business or any good things that came out of it other than that encouragement? New contract, perhaps?
有没有什么其他的一些好消息？聊没聊新的合同这些？
还没有聊新的合同，主要是还是得你打铁还得自身硬力，还是得有一个好的状态，打好比赛，我觉得才能去谈好的合同，然后更多人喜欢你才能去谈好的合同。Right,
not yet, because I think the key thing is I have to be strong enough so I can get a better deal on my agreement, on my contract, then I can have more fans. And more followers.
Okay. And by the way, I know you're a big fan of. I know you're a big fan of Tom Brady, and Dana White's a big a friend of his. Tom Brady, the New England Patriots quarterback, or at least for now. Did Tom reach out to you? Did Dana call him on FaceTime or something? Did he send you some encouraging words?
Oh, 那个 Tom Brady 啊，你Tom Brady 的那个粉丝，然后那个 Tom Brady 跟大拿又是特别好的朋友。 然后如果就是说Tom Brady联系大拿，说想跟你会个面，你乐意吗？我当然乐意了，我太开心了。Oh, definitely, I will. Yeah, I will do that. I'm happy to meet him.
Okay. And last thing.
I'm willing to meet him.
Yes, that would be amazing. You're a bigger superstar, in my opinion, than him. Last thing, is it true you have the baseball that Tony Ferguson gave you with you over there?
魔术师给了你一个那个球。Oh,
sorry.
No problem. There it is. The famous baseball. That's amazing. Was that your first time meeting Tony on Friday?
周五的时候是你第一次见到那个叶某。对对对，我平时之前一直在看他的比赛，还有他的训练的视频，然后第一次见到他，非常有魅力，我觉得。对，然后他跟哈比布，我觉得他们的比赛会非常非常精彩。我觉得他跟哈比布都是。 就是一个传奇人物，英雄一样的一个人物。
Oh yes, I've been watching his training and his fight for a long time, but that was the first time I met him in person. And I think he's a great fighter, and also Khabib is awesome. So I think their fight will be amazing. They're both legends.
Yeah, and I have to know. Oh, go ahead. Did she say something?
They're both legends.
Did he give
Habib
you
and both Habib and Tony Ferguson.
Did he give you the ball or did you ask for the ball? Who initiated that?
那个球是要过来的，他主动给我的。He just gave it to me. I didn't ask.
That's amazing. That must have been a great gift for you, right? A great honor to have his baseball.
这应该是一特别好的、特别大的一个荣誉了哈！你能拿他的这个球。
对，因为他随手都是带着这个球。
Yeah, definitely, because Tony Ferguson carries the ball everywhere. So he's been with him for years. I'm so happy that he gave it to me.
I love it. It perhaps gave you some superpowers going into that fight. And by the way, Tommy, I just want to say, I know Rogan kind of put you on the spot there, but you had a lot of emotion. I thought it was great, that moment there. So don't feel bad about that, all right?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for understanding. I was just like you guys said, too emotional.
Yeah, but that's okay. I know you guys are very close, and it was a great moment, and it's all very well-deserved. Thank you so much, Zhang. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate you coming on. I know you're tired of talking to everyone and a little bit beat up, but it means a lot to us. Congratulations on the win. Congratulations on everything that's come your way, and I wish you guys nothing but the best in the future.
感谢你来这个访谈，然后恭喜你获得了这个胜利，然后知道你现在特别的累，然后占用你的时间，所以总是致敬，然后呢这个希望后边越走越顺。
我也特别高兴可以参加侯安妮的这个采访，然后我也非常喜欢侯安妮，我也经常我学英文的时候也每天会听她的那个Meeting。So it's my pleasure to be here in the Helwani show, and also I'm a big fan of you, Helwani, and when I learn English, I listen to your show all the time.
Oh, wow. That means a lot to me. That really does. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to learn how to speak Mandarin, and then we're going to switch. You're going to do English. I'll do Mandarin, all right?
他现在说,是在学汉语,然后下回采访的时候基本上争取,他说汉语,你说英语。
Oh,
cool. Okay.
Cool. All right. Cool. That's awesome. Thank you so much, guys. Talk to you soon. Cool.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you,
Ariel.
Yes.
Thank you.
I learned that as well on Thursday when we spoke. Great stuff there. What a lovely young woman. What a tremendous fighter. Just unbelievable heart, not just by her, but by Ioana as well. And happy to hear that no serious injuries. Obviously banged up, bruised up. You saw the hematoma, but they were both discharged late Saturday, technically Sunday morning, and just an all-time classic. Trust me, if you just watch the shows and you skip the pay-per-views, find a way on ESPN Plus to rewatch that if you're living in America, because it was really one of the all-time great fights. And I am so, like I said at the top, I am so impressed, and I left with such great admiration and awe of what they did. Really amazing. That was the best that MMA has to offer. And it was just an incredible fight. So it will go down as one of the all-time greats. I enjoyed being there. It was an honor and a privilege to cover that event in person. And you know, before every big show, we do these weigh-in shows, right? We do these morning weigh-in shows. I've said it's one of the highlights of the week for me because there's great theater. This time, unfortunately, we had one fighter who missed weight and then eventually had to pull out of the event. We wish our best to Emily Whitmire, who, of course, weighed in a pound and a half over. And on Saturday, we found out that she was out of the fight. While we were waiting for Yoel Romero on Friday, Bob Bennett, the executive director of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, just kind of walked up to our set. Brett and I are there. We're doing our thing. We're kind of killing some time. Bob Bennett, who's usually up towards the scale, is, you know, kind of busy doing his thing. He just kind of walked towards us, and we were in between a break. We were playing something. I said, Bob, do you want to join us? You know, you're not usually in this vicinity. And he said, yes, I would like to join you. And I thought, wow, what an opportunity this is. And I know not everyone has access to ESPN Plus and maybe doesn't watch the early weigh-in shows. So I asked Corporate Jake if we can replay some of the more pertinent stuff from that conversation. Took out the part about Romero, who were waiting on Whitmire because it's no longer newsy. But we did ask him about open scoring and officiating, judging, the face-off between Fury and Wilder, and then him saying that they're not going to face off at the weigh-ins. A lot of great stuff here from Bob Bennett. He doesn't do a lot of interviews, so I thought it would be interesting to replay that here on the program. Take a look. Over the past few weeks, this is why it's such a treat to have you here. A lot of talk in our sport about officiating,
oh,
and judging and refereeing and weight cutting. I mean, the Nevada Athletic Commission, in my opinion, along with California, the gold standards, right, as far as regulation is concerned. I just wanted to get your thoughts on everything that's been said this past month about judging and officiating. Do you feel like something radically needs to be changed? Do you feel like there is an issue in our sport?
No, you know, I'm in frequent contact with Andy Foster from the California Athletic Commission, and the way we assign our officials or the way we recommend them to the chairman and commissioners and assign them, all of them, they work very tirelessly. They're dedicated to the sport. They're not boxing, for the most part, and MMA judges. They're primarily, for the most part, MMA judges. They do training. We have training. If you go to MMADecisions.com, you see who the top of the line judges are and who consistently perform well under pressure. Those are the judges that we bring out for the UFC fights here. Just as the same process that we do for boxing. So I think that the judges that we put to work here, select them in the best interest of the fighters. Mm. We're looking to make sure that, hey, if you don't knock them out, you don't submit them, submit your opponent, and it does go to the scorecards, but when you come to the state of Nevada, you're going to get a good decision.
And one more for me before I send it over to Brett. I'm just curious, tonight in Kansas, Invicta will be holding an event, and they're utilizing open scoring. How do you feel about open scoring, which has become a hot topic in our sport as well?
Yeah, we don't advocate for open scoring right now. You know, it's something we've spoken about the last several years. I think there's a litany of challenges when you have open scoring, although just about every sport out there does have open scoring. But if all of a sudden you're one of the judges and you find out you're behind, you may try and compensate. It may take from your focus. A judge has to be paying attention every second of every minute of every round. And being a former boxing judge for 2.5 years, listen, I'm committed to my score, but I really don't want to know where everybody else is. And I don't think it's in the best interest of the fighters either, because all of a sudden you're behind, and you may fight differently and put yourself in harm's way, or the other guy may find the other fighter, male or female, excuse me, the other fighter may say, hey, I'm up on the scorecards, I'm going to dance, I'm going to stay away from my opponent. So, you know, just quickly answering these questions, there's a number of responses that I've already written out regarding open scoring. I know there's other individuals that advocate for it and are supportive of it, but I don't think it's in the best interest of the sport or the fighter.
Bob, just a couple for me. You mentioned that you get to see, you know, Emily, she comes off the scale, and that's when your team gets to take a look at her and say, no, you can't cut any more weight. Do you ever want to be in a situation, though, where it's like you get a look at the fighter before that? Like, for instance, Yoel, you know, he's off doing his thing with his team, but he's not under your supervision as of now, right? So, right. So like, when you're aware of a guy who has had trouble making weight before, do you want to set up some type of way to monitor him, or do you think that that's just a little bit of overreach on the commission's part?
You know, I think that these fighters are professional fighters. They get paid. He's fighting for a championship fight. The UFC is very interested in him. He has a manager. He is a trainer. He knows what he's got to do to make weight. I think it's incumbent upon the fighter to make weight and not for us to monitor him or her, you know, 45 days out, 30 days, Skype him on a scale or something like that. No, I don't think that's within us regulating the weights of the fighters. We are very confident in our cage side physicians. We're very confident in our inspectors that are in the dressing rooms with the fighters, that have them constantly under observation before they fight. And I can tell you, probably about 4 years ago, there was a fighter that all of a sudden just nodded out in the dressing room. And some people may have thought, hey, he fell asleep or something. But we brought our doctors in right away. And we said, no, he got pulled from the card. There was another fighter that didn't end up fighting for some other medical reasons that I don't think I'm privy to state publicly on. But that was picked up from our doctors as well as our inspectors. So I think everybody makes a concerted effort to look out for the health and safety of the fighters. But we all go about it just a little bit differently. You know, but our intentions are all honorable, and we're looking out for their safety.
Hey, Bob, one more. When Adesanya was on Ariel's show, some people have noticed that he had a little mark on his arm and that there was some speculation that it might be staph. So I'm just curious. He has completely directly said that it's not staph. But those types of things pop on your radar, these internet rumors, these photos, and then do you take a closer look at him when he gets in?
Yeah, periodically they do. You know, I get different alerts anytime the Nevada State Athletic Commission is mentioned. I go ahead and read it and see if it's applicable. We have an excellent relationship with the UFC and Dr. Davidson. And Dr. Davidson works hand in glove with our doctor on staff, Dr. Timothy Trainer, orthopedic specialist. So when we see anything that may be questionable, they're in contact and there are documents going back and forth to make sure that we're moving in the right direction of the fighter. We're looking out for the fighter. So yes, periodically, in answer to your question, when it does come up, You know, we work hand in glove with the UFC and any other organization when there's a question mark about their fighter.
And by the way, I'd be remiss if I don't ask this question, and forgive me for straying, but it was such a big story a couple weeks ago here in Las Vegas, the return of Tyson Fury. The commission made some news when you ordered them not to square off at the weigh-in. This was a big story, even Conor McGregor weighing in on it, pleading for the commission to rethink your decision to not allow them. But it ended up being a great visual. Could you just explain why? Because I thought that was a fascinating move on your part.
Sure. You know, it's one I spoke to Chairman Marnot III about before we made that decision. Recommended it, and we brainstormed it, and quite frankly, the press conference was less than professional. Like, you know, you can get fighters can get in each other's face. Once they put their hands on each other, you know, a lot of them, they flip a switch, and then all of a sudden, you know, we have an altercation. So they already pushed each other once, and Tyson pushed him again, okay, and it was like, really?
Yeah.
Now, what happens if you slip, you cut your eye,
right,
you cut your lip, you roll your ankle, then what are you going to do? What about all the fans that already paid for their tickets, have their flight arrangements, are looking for a fantastic vacation in Vegas, see a great fight, and now because of poor judgment, when you've already been alerted that there could be an issue, that we decided, no, we're not going to have a face-off. And quite frankly, we weren't looking to make a story, but it probably got better PR in the weigh-in than the actual another face-off. And what was really good about it, which was, you know, another team effort, is that Top Rank, Mr. Aram, and Tom Brown from TGB, they were supportive of our decision. So that always makes it a lot more palatable.
Yeah.
Could we see more?
Well, I hope not.
Yeah. Well, it's good you have Dana White standing up there for these UFC events.
Oh, yeah, right.
No shenanigans.
That's
there,
right.
For the most part.
Dana's got things under control.
I can think of a few. Yeah,
but it was weird having them stand so close with no one in between them. That seemed to be a disaster waiting to happen. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And it comes down to judgment on the commission's part to regulate the event. And quite frankly, people may not think it, but once again, we're looking out for the fighter.
Mm.
If you remember from that pressure, Wilder even said he was getting tired of waiting for this rematch.
Yeah, right.
You know, he was ready to go a while ago. Mm-hmm. Well, what would have happened if one of you two guys would have slipped and hurt yourself, you know, at the press conference? You know, not only would have you lost out, the fans would have lost out, everybody would have, the promoters, the state.
So there you have it. I thought that was a really great conversation, really interesting stuff from Bob Bennett. And like I said, he doesn't do a lot of interviews. I've called California and Nevada the gold standard. I don't think I'm going out on a limb as far as regulation is concerned. The head of the California Commission, someone I'm very fond of, Andy Foster. Bob Bennett also leads up, you know, depending on where you rank them, the number two most influential, the number one most influential commission in the United States. So great to get his insight about a whole host of topics. And open scoring has been a big topic as of late. Kudos to the Kansas State Commission for implementing it on Friday for the Invicta show. There you see it right over there. Fascinating stuff. So they would hold the scores in back of the fighter, and it was up to the corner to inform the fighter whether or not they wanted to tell them where they were at as far as scoring is concerned. Isn't that fascinating? I mean, just an amazing twist that I didn't foresee. I just thought everyone would know about it, but you'd have people behind holding this up. And as you can see, Max Holloway was in attendance as well. He is really taking a liking to this topic, and it would be up to the corner to actually relay that information to the fighter. Really interesting stuff. I've reached out to Max and his team to get his feedback, because he's, like I said, really taking a liking to this particular topic and has really been the one. I mean, he doesn't live in Kansas. He flew from Hawaii to Kansas to then Las Vegas to take part in it all, and I thought it was really interesting. So I reached out to his team. Hopefully we'll get to talk to Max about that experience and, of course, his attempt to fight for the belt again later on this year. But for now, I am so excited. I can't even put into words how excited I am to welcome in our next guest. In my opinion, he is a living legend. He's one of the greatest promoters in the history of combat sports. You know him. He is the CEO of Top Rank. He's had a great run as of late. He's the one and only, the living legend himself, Bob Arum. What a great pleasure this is. Bob, how are you?
Good, very good.
It's great to talk to you again, Bob, and I stress the word again because I don't know if you know this. When I was a young whippersnapper in the business back in 2009, you were promoting Manny Pacquiao versus Miguel Cotto at Yankee Stadium. I spoke to you for the first time. Do you have any recollection of this interview?
Yeah, well, that was a great event. I loved doing that fight with Jerry Jones. It was a great fight. Pacquiao Cotto was here, was at the MGM. That was a terrific fight. I mean, Manny surprised everybody by being able to knock Cotto out. That was a major, major victory for him.
Yes, and you guys had this media day at Yankee Stadium, which was really cool. And I know you've talked to a gazillion people since then in 2009. I just wanted to play you a quick clip from that conversation to refresh your memory, okay? Here we go. Have you ever been to an MMA fight before?
Yeah, it's terrible.
Terrible. You would never...
These are all my friends. The Fertittas, you know, their father, the late father who died, was a very close friend of mine. Dana White, I admire. These guys have done a marvelous job promoting UFC. They've done extremely well. All hats off to them. But for me, it's junk. It's garbage.
Any part of you a little bit upset because of how good they're doing? Is that why you're taking the shots?
No, I love the way they have shown us because of how well they've been doing in certain aspects to make us adapt. They do an unbelievable job on advertising on the internet. We're following that. They do an unbelievable job in the arena with music and so forth and steaming up the crowd. We're trying to duplicate it. They are great promoters. They are really sensational promoters, and they're really good guys. So I give them all the kudos and all the credit for what they've done. There's no knock on them. These are good class guys who've really built a terrific business.
Okay, so this is what I'm wondering, Bob. 11 years later, has your stance on MMA changed at all? Because that's what drew all the headlines, if you recall.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I my stand is the same. The UFC guys are great promoters. They've done a great, great job. But as far as I'm concerned, it's trash. I don't like it. I don't like to watch it. I mean, but again, I'm just one person. And obviously, they've built a very big fan base. So all credit for them. But I'm not going to say that this is a sport that I love, because I don't. I really think it's, it really does nothing for me. I don't like to watch it. But again, I'm just one person, and those are my views. And a lot of it could be because of my age and so forth. I mean, I don't know, but I'm not going to kid you here and tell you, oh, I've changed my mind. It's a great, great sport. I love that mixed martial arts. I don't. I think it's trash.
That's fine, and I respect that. It's not for everyone. Different strokes for different folks. And
absolutely correct.
Yeah, that's totally fine. I think your opinion is of interest because of your great history in the world of combat sports as a promoter. So I was just curious if at all you've changed your stance at all, but that's fine. Just one last question on this. Have you ever been to an MMA event? And if so, what did you think of it?
I haven't never been to an MMA event. I've watched it on television once or twice. I just think it doesn't do anything for me for people engaging in combat that way. I mean, I just don't enjoy it. I don't see the skills particularly. I mean, again, but that's me, there may be a lot of people or some people who watch mixed martial arts, UFC, who don't like boxing. Hey, that's their choice.
Amen. All right. Now, I have to ask you, Bob, and again, it's a great pleasure to have you on. I'm a big fan of what Top Rank is doing, especially these days. It's been an amazing run for you and the team. You are 88 years young, Bob. At some point, do you want to take a step back? Do you want to take a break, or do you feel just as energized as you did back in 1966?
I'm certainly as energized as I've been when I started. I may not be able to get around as quickly as I did before, but my mental faculties are very, very good. I have a tremendous memory. I love promoting these young fighters, and I think we do a very, very good job of that. And as long as I can continue doing it, I will. Like my good friend George Foreman said, age is just the number.
Mm-hmm.
It's different for different people. Some people are old when they're in their 70s. Some people are young when they're in their 80s. It's just the number. It depends on the genes that God gave you.
If I would have told you back in 66, 67 that in 2020, at 88 years young, that you'd still be doing this, promoting top-level fights, would you have believed me? Like, did you think this thing had legs?
Well, you know, again, the fact that I've been able to continue to do it when I'm, you know, my age is something that I wouldn't have foreseen. But I knew, based on my family history, that we had the ability to live to a very old age and to be productive. You understand, I want to explain to you this because your audience wouldn't understand. I am an Ashkenazi. My great-grandparents and grandparents came from Eastern Europe. Among Ashkenazi men, not all, but many, we have what's called a Y chromosome. A Y chromosome means that you can abuse certain things, like maybe drink too much, maybe smoke too many joints, but it's not going to affect your longevity and your ability to function at an old age. I have had grand uncles who lived past 100. I had many uncles who lived into their late 90s and early 100s, and they functioned extraordinarily well until the end. So I don't see any reason why 10 years from now, when I'll be 98, I can't do what I'm doing today.
I hope so. And by the way, Bob, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a Sephardic Jew. So, you know, we come from different...
Well, Sephardic Jews don't have that.
No, unfortunately. So I'm screwed, right? I'm not going to live as long as you and do the great things that you're doing at your age, but I'm happy that you are and that you're still around doing this at the, you know, the level that you're doing with the passion that you have always had. Can I ask you, I'm fascinated by promotion. I have said somewhat boldly on this show in the past, Bob, that I think that I could promote better than some of the great promoters in mixed martial arts. I feel very strongly about this. Could you tell me what makes a great promoter? What is the secret to being a great promoter?
Well, a great promoter of essence has to take an event and has to get people interested in the event. He has to expand the audience as best he can. For example, when I do a major fight, it's not only to the boxing fans that I'm pitching my promotion, but also to the sports fans, and then finally to the general public. So a good promoter is able to expand the base tremendously. Now, again, you take Dana White. He is a very good promoter, and he's been able to build slowly but surely a big audience for MMA, for UFC, which has grown over the years. That's another example of being a good promoter. My strength is to take an event and to reach the general public and get as many eyeballs tuned to the event as possible. So, I mean, that's what I've excelled in. Dana has done a tremendous job building a consistent audience for UFC.
Especially now that you're both in business with ESPN, I'd love to see you and Dana shake hands and, you know, kind of bury the hatchet. Do you think that'll ever happen?
let me tell you the God's honest truth. I have never, ever met Dana White. I have never, ever talked to Dana White. Again, all this idea of a feud is sort of nonsense that we throw out to the press when it benefits an event that we're doing or something. But I don't know who Dana White is as a person. I have never, ever met him or had any conversation with him. How do you like that?
I mean, I'm surprised because I know you guys have gone back and forth over the years. Not even a conversation.
Well,
you live in Las Vegas.
Again, that's publicity. Mm. I have never met him or talked to him.
Okay, fair enough. Now, you are coming off a great event just a couple of weeks ago in Las Vegas, Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder. As far as the big events that you've promoted, where did that one rank? Because I thought between having ESPN and Fox come together, it felt like a really big deal.
Well, that was essentially what made it, I think, the event that it was. The fact that you had these two major networks cooperating and publicizing the event. And I hope that we'll have that in the future. They were both great partners, and I look forward to doing it with them again.
So is July 18th, in fact, the date? I know you told our colleague Dan Raphael a couple of weeks ago that that was what it was looking like. Is it going to be on July 18th, the trilogy between Wilder and Fury?
Well, we'll be discussing that with the BBC people who promote Wilder. The contract provides for a date of July 18th as the final date for the fight to take place. But, of course, we will be discussing all options in the next day or so.
So it could technically happen before July 18th, just not after July 18th.
Yeah, it could. July 18th is the last date. And then there are injury provisions and that sort of thing. So, again, until we talk to the other side with whom we've had a tremendous relationship in this last fight, I can't give you definitively the date for the third fight.
Ordinarily, do you like co-promoting? Do you like working with the likes of Al Haymon and other promoters? Or do you prefer it when it's all in-house, it's just two top-ranked fighters going toe-to-toe?
Well, generally, we like to do it ourselves, but there is an advantage doing it with a co-promoter that knows what they're doing because you get more people in the mix and different ideas, some of which could be a lot better than the ideas that we have. So this last event that we did with BBC is an example where two promotional companies come together to do an event, and it makes the event bigger. And so I have only big props for BBC, the way we worked together in the last event.
If all goes well for Tyson, potentially down the line, we'll get that fight that we've all been clamoring for, Tyson Fury against Anthony Joshua. And if that happens, you'll likely have to...
Whoa. Anthony Joshua is getting knocked out. Listen to me.
Yes.
Anthony Joshua is getting knocked out in June 20 at Tottenham Stadium in London by my guy, Kubrat Bula. Take it to the bank. There won't be an Anthony Joshua after June 20.
Fair enough. But if there is, or at some point, if he does in fact fight Tyson Fury, you'll have to co-promote with Eddie Hearn. What do you think of young Edward Hearn? We're talking about promotion, right, and promoters and what makes a good promoter. He's sort of burst onto the scene over the last couple of years. How do you feel about his style?
Well, you have to understand that Eddie's father, Barry, is a tremendous friend of mine. That back in the day, we promoted a lot of fights together, all very, very good, positive experiences. I've done fights now with Eddie, and I have a lot of more praise for him than condemnation. He's done certain things wrong, not dishonest, but certain things wrong. But by and large, he's become a very, very good promoter, and I would have absolutely no problem working together with him on a big heavyweight unification show. But I'm telling you, it ain't going to happen because Pulev is going to knock out Joshua.
Just a few weeks ago, Bob, you said that you were open, if the right offer came about, to selling Top Rank, and this created a big stir. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it was just a question that was asked of you, not so much that Top Rank is for sale. Could you clarify that? Are you looking to sell Top Rank, or
yeah,
was it just a question?
A couple of things.
Okay.
They asked me the question, would Top Rank be for sale? And what I said was what Kurt Kerkorian said, that everything is for sale. Give me the right price, you know. I mean, if Bloomberg came to me and gave me part of his network for Top Rank, I would make the deal in 2 seconds. But that's what I meant. And what we would be more open to, because we want to expand internationally, is to have a strategic partner come in and work with them to give us the wherewithal to open up offices all over the world.
Okay. So thank you for clarifying that. I was, you know, a lot of people were wondering what truly was meant behind that. I appreciate it. Could I ask you, Bob, I know I'm asking about a lot of fights and we just have a couple of minutes left with you. I really appreciate this. This is a lot of fun to have you back on the show or to talk to you for the first time on the show. Favorite fight that you ever promoted, Bob? Is there one that comes to mind that just had it all?
Yeah, Hagler-Hearns. 3 rounds of unbelievable action. The fighters had great animosity. They never took a step back. And Marvin knocked Tommy out in the 3rd round. That was the most exciting, greatest fight that I've ever promoted, second only to the thriller in Manila between Ali and Frazier, where they went to war for 14 rounds until Frazier couldn't see because his eyes were shut, and they stopped. Eddie Futch stopped the fight after the 14th round. So those were, I mean, I've had some great, great fights and great events, but those two fights stick in my memory as being very, very special.
Any chance you try to recreate something like the Thrill in Manila with Wilder Fury 3 and do it outside of Las Vegas?
That's always a possibility, certainly. Certainly, and I think if Joshua survives a Pulev fight, a Fury-Joshua fight, would pretty much definitely take place outside of Vegas, whether in the UK or in the Mideast. But again, you know, Fury loves Vegas. Vegas really is Tyson Fury's kind of town, you know, just the way it was Elvis Presley's town. So it's going to be tough to get Tyson Fury away from Vegas. But I would think that a Fury-Joshua fight would take place more likely in England or in the Mideast.
A couple months ago, you said that you were interested in doing a fight between Terrence Crawford and Conor McGregor, maybe a two-part series, MMA and boxing, right? And I know you're no stranger to Manny Pacquiao. He has since signed with Conor McGregor's management team. I'm wondering if maybe they have come to you. I heard that there were maybe some talks of linking up with you again, Manny linking up with you and Paradigm. Any truth to this talks?
Well, we're exploring the whole situation, but as far as I know, PBC still has one option with Manny, which would mean us working together closely with PBC if we were to promote a fight for Manny Pacquiao. But that's something that I'll, when the time comes, I'll discuss with Al Haymon.
Any chance we see a Terrence Crawford, Errol Spence fight in the near future now that we're in this co-promotion mood?
I would venture to say that absent the accident that happened to Spence, we would now be talking about a a Crawford-Spence fight with a date and a venue firmly in place. But I think that, and I saw Spence was sitting behind me in the for the Tyson Fury fight with Wilder, and I don't know if he's back in the kind of condition that he would have to be where he could fight a Crawford. I really don't know. So again, I'm not pushing it because I don't want him to go into a fight not prepared with an opponent like Terrence Crawford.
And two last quick things. Lopez Lomachenko, is that going to happen at Madison Square Garden in May?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we'll get this coronavirus thing under control so we can count on doing the event in a big arena like Madison Square Garden. But we're sorting through everything, and we hope to have an announcement shortly about that fight.
Okay, yes, because I know that it has become obviously a global issue. It actually canceled one of your events overseas not that long ago. Speaking of which, I'm a huge fan of Shakur Stevenson's. He comes back to action March 14th at Madison Square Garden, so that's coming up as well. That's going to be good, right? We're good with that one? That one won't be affected, correct?
That's Saturday night.
Yep.
We're good with that one. Yeah, we'll get that in. Mariaga and Shakur Stevenson. And then a few days later, the same arena, the theater at Madison Square Garden, Mick Conlon, the Irish star, will be performing and fighting in I think his third or fourth straight St. Patrick's Day event. And we have Paddy Donovan, a big superstar, from Northern Ireland. No, he's from Limerick, so regular Ireland. And he'll be fighting a tremendous prospect, middleweight. And the card is loaded with Irish kids to celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Always a great scene.
It's also in the Garden Tuesday on the 17th.
It's always a great scene when Mick Conlon fights at MSG, especially on St. Paddy's Day. Who could forget several years ago when Conor McGregor walked him out prior to his pro debut? That was a really cool thing that he did, and I think a lot of people remember
right.
That.
They're really good friends. All these Irish kids root and pull for one another. It was Carl Frampton or Mick Conlon or Paddy Donovan, and Conor McGregor is part of that group.
Bob, this has been a real pleasure for me. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Continued success, best of health to you, and continued success to the entire team at Top Rank. You know, we may not agree on MMA and whether or not it's entertaining, but I have great respect for what you've accomplished throughout your career, and I'm a huge fan of what you guys are doing at Top Rank. So thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But remember, what I think about MMA is just my...
Absolutely. I understand that, and I appreciate it very much. All the best to you, Bob. There he is, a living legend as far as the promotion world is concerned, the boxing world is concerned, the great Bob Arum. First time I speak to him since 2009. Wow, it's been a while. All right, without further ado, we end with the defending champ, the man who closed the show on Saturday. It has become a tradition. Thankfully, he comes on after his big wins, and hopefully, I don't know if he's doing it just yet. I'm going to find out in a matter of seconds. Hopefully, he's in bed. That's just part of the tradition as well, if I'm being honest. In case you missed it, here's a quick reminder of what happened Saturday night.
You can lead a horse to water, but you can't force it to drink. I took his best shot. He didn't do nothing with it. I hurt his leg. I made his leg black, purple, blue, and whatever else color is on the rainbow. I did my job. It's just hot. I really wanted to dance tonight, man. I was hoping he'd bring it. There's levels to this. And people who don't understand the intricacies of the striking game don't understand. Bring the fight to me. Yeah. If you want the belt, come get the fucking belt.
And so without further ado, let us say hello to the man who defended his title on Saturday, the reigning defending UFC middleweight champion. Is he in bed? Yes, he is in bed. And there's his nipple. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good, brother. What's up?
I'm doing well. Did we wake you up?
No, I mean, I know what time it is, but I think it's 3:30 on the East Coast. So we're supposed to speak to Luke Thomas at 3:30, which I assume was like in a few hours. But yeah, they called me first and I was like, fuck, I think I double booked.
Uh-oh.
But yeah, we'll sort that out. Yeah, it's all good.
All right. Well, I appreciate this, Izzy. Thank you so much. And congratulations on the victory. What a performance. I defended you at the top of the show. I don't feel the need to do it all over again here in front of you. But I want to ask you, because you have told us time and again, you've been in over 100 fights, right? 80 kickboxing matches and whatnot. Is it possible that that was maybe the weirdest fight that you have ever been a part of?
100%. 100% the weirdest fight I've ever been a part of. 100%. Even for me as a fan, the most boring fight I've ever had. And I don't have boring fights. It's not my style. It's not my gig. But, yeah, you know, it wasn't boring because of me. It was not boring because of me, you know, because you can just check my resume and see that I come to fight. I'm not an actor. I'm a fighter.
In the first 90 seconds, when you see him just kind of standing there and it takes him almost 2.5 minutes just to throw his first strike, what are you thinking in that moment?
Like for me, I was just thinking, don't give in, don't get frustrated. So then I thought, okay, it sounds stupid. Like, oh, there's a guy standing there, not doing anything. Should go hit him, right? But he's not doing anything. He's 100% defense. And he's waiting for that split second so he can unload that knockout blow. And he did. I mean, at one point, I had my foot from the outside. I attacked with my foot on the inside. And I can't remember, was I southpaw or orthodox? And then as soon as I blitz in, he lets go of that left hand and cracks me. Never rocked me, never hurt me, never dazed me, never flashed me. But he cracks me with this, and I could feel the thud. I was like, ooh. Don't get hit by that again. So if that was his game plan for him to just sit there and hopefully I'll come to him and he can crack me, that's a really shitty game plan. Because he said prior to the fight, you know, I got to knock him out. I have the perfect shot. And since that, he was trying to land that left hand all night. But, I mean, the rest of it were missing. He only landed that one good shot in the first round. So that's the only reason I give him the first round, because he had me compromised. And also, disclaimer, when he cracked me, you know, he hurt my eye. Like he compromised my eye with my vision, and I could see two Romeros. When Silva did that in the second round, when Anderson Silva, who is an older guy as well, did that in the second round, what did he do? He pressed the action. He pressed the action. He came looking to trying to finish, and I was on my bicycle and I was shucking and driving. Then I started countering as well, and that was after in the first round. In the first round, Silva was pressing the action and I rocked him. So if you visibly like compromise someone or hurt someone or hurt their vision, you're not supposed to still just stand there and wait for them to come to you. I'm not stupid. After you just punch me, I'm not going to be like, all right, let me do that again. No. So I was just waiting for like an onslaught of a barrage or something, as he's known for. But you know why he didn't do it? Because he knows if he puts all that out and even his bar goes down more than usual, like his health goes down more than usual, then he knows when I come back, I'm definitely coming after him and he'll be gassed. So he was trying to conserve his gas tank the whole night. And that's a really weird way of conserving your gas tank.
When you were preparing for the fight, was there ever a thought that he would fight like that? We've never really seen him fight like that before.
A little bit in the second Robert Whittaker fight, but then he picked it up later on, at least.
Yeah.
But that, no. I would have just, you know that dummy that most gyms have, that bob, you know? Yeah, I'd rather just, like, play with that the whole camp. That would have been more accurate to get ready for this fight.
What was your game plan going into the fight?
Game plan is not to get sucked into his game. My game plan was to implement my game. But for me, was my coach's game plan was, like I said, attack from the outside. I won't give away too much. Attack from the outside, keep turning him, but initially scramble him up here, scramble his brain. So it was bizarre. Like if you're trying to probe someone, you're trying to attack and they're not doing anything back. And it's not like I didn't just go there and stand there and do nothing. Like I was moving. That's how a fight's supposed to be, like a dance, man. So I was moving, I was probing, I was, you know, trying to get reactions, and homeboy was just like, nah, I'll wait for you to come to me. Like, I'm going to swing. And I know I haven't seen the fight yet because I've been busy with other shit, but like, I already know how how I would have attacked them differently, you know, if I can go back in time.
How would you?
I mean, definitely would have started with the legs earlier on, because that was so easy. That was just easy pickings. And I mean, even, you know, Dana said afterwards, because me and Dana had a talk, he requested I come see him in his room, his dressing room, and then we had a private talk away from everyone, just man to man in the bathroom, and we're on the same page. And for me, you know, I'm not really a company man, but at the same time, I like to make sure the brass are happy. And Dana, I told him, like, you know, I don't fucking pussy out. He's like, bro, I know. He's like, you know, I bring a fucking fight. Check my, he's like, you don't have to tell me. I know if someone comes to fight, you fucking fight. And this guy didn't do shit. He was just waiting there, like, your last shot at the title, blah, 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 blah. And then for me, I was like, all right, cool. As long as we're in the same page. And I said, now this next guy, you know, he's going to bring a fight. And he's like, yep, I know. So that's what I'm pumping. That's what I'm really excited about. It sucks about this one, but it's not your fault. I was like, yep, cool. Thank you. So, I mean, as long as they know, then my money don't get fucked up and we're good.
Mm. So he asked for the meeting to maybe clear the air to find out what you were thinking in the fight?
No, I mean, he asked for the meeting, you know, post his press conference, because sometimes, you know, how the media likes to twist questions and stuff like that. So then we just talked and we were on the same page. And I was like, yep, cool. Yeah, I agree. And then we just kept it rolling.
Is there any part of you, you know, one of the byproducts of a fight like this is we have very short-term memories in this game. And so now all of a sudden you're a boring fighter. You're a scared fighter, things like that. Are you afraid that this is going to, you know, hit your promotional, you know, buzz and stock, things like that? Yeah, that word.
Stock goes up and down. That's the nature of the stocks. They fluctuate. So, I mean, if the stock goes down from this fight, I don't think so. I think it goes up, but it doesn't go up as high as I anticipated. Like, my plan was to fuck this dude up, was to finish this dude when he came in, when he, you know, like he's known for, or create a reaction. Like, for me, it's even when you faint someone, they normally get a reaction. Later on, I was getting the reactions I wanted because my corner, Andre, my wrestling coach, said, you know, make your feints more animated. But like, if someone's 100% defense, even if you faint, they're just going to be like, nah, I'm not doing shit. And they just, yeah, it's frustrating. So I didn't, after the first round, I didn't let it frustrate me. I focused on my game plan and I had 25 minutes of focus. Like my coaches said, you need 25 minutes of focus with this guy. You can't let, like, he almost bores you in a way. Like, it's weird. He almost bores you in a way to the point where you're like, right, I got to make something happen. It's not up to you. When you have something to protect and people want that stuff, they have to come get it. That's how this works. Especially if this is your last chance, your fourth and last chance at trying to get that. You should go out. Even in the fourth round, the fifth round, I'm like, right, he's going to come heavy now. But he was just so scared of unloading and then having to deplete a gas tank, and then I'll take advantage of that. But yeah, I mean, a guy like Kelvin, you know, he's a guy that, yeah, Ricker as well, they came after it. They brought it. They brought the fucking fight. And you know me, I can go after it. I bring the fucking fight. But I'm not going to go after it when I'm the one with everything to lose. Mm. I went after it. I probed it. I was like, are we going to do this? But then if you're going to stand there for fucking 2.5 minutes and just look at me, then I'm going to be like, right, fuck you. And then in the last 20 seconds, he gets all animated and shit like that. And I'm just like, are you? I know, like, he's a really good actor, man. I've said that from the wins, like his dramatics. I think it's because he's a, you know, Spanish or Latino or Cubano. Like, the dramatics in him is very profound.
By the way, that's the second time that you bring up boring. And I just want to make clear, like, in the fight itself, you're fighting a grown man who has a great resume. It's one thing for the fans to say that was a boring fight, but is it possible that you're actually bored in the fight as well? Or is your guard so high that
I love to fight? Bro, I love to fight. This is what I've been looking forward to.
Yeah.
I was looking forward to like being locked in a cage with this guy. And then I have nothing to do but to focus on not getting fucked up by this guy. You know, I love fighting. This is what I love to do. So for me, after the fight, I was frustrated. Like, you're going to act like that, but you, me and him know. You can act all you want. You can try and get the crowd inside all you want, but me and him know. Me and him know who pushed that fight. Me and him know who was scoring in that fight. So, I mean, he has to live with this for the rest of his life. He had one more shot at this shit. He didn't even deserve to be in there with me. He had no fucking right to be in there with me. But I gave him the shot because I thought, okay, this is the guy that everyone's fucking scared of. Everyone doesn't want to fight. Let me see what this hype is about. So I called him out. I gave him the shit after going on a 3-fight losing streak. It was a fucking gift for me. So the fact that he attacked, not even attacked, the fact that he approached the fight like that in your last title fucking shot is something he's going to have to live with for the rest of his life.
You alluded to this.
I mean, for me,
sorry, go ahead.
My idea was literally, I mean, you go on ESPN all week, whose face is plastered all over that? Mm. It's me. You know, after my wake up, you saw an embedded me sitting down, looking over the city and just reminiscing and thinking about where I was in 2015, I believe, when May Pack happened. And after the fight, I was reminiscing and just looking at the city and going, like, I was like literally 4 or 5 hours just sitting there looking at the city, you know, one day, just visualizing. And I had that like epiphany moment again that like it was my time to shine. It was kind of like New York. I was hoping, you know, how New York kind of like was my first pay-per-view in America. Like it launched me. It wasn't a fight night. I opened the pay-per-view for DC Black Beast. This was my pay-per-view headliner. You know, I was the one that the show was revolved around. So I was going to show out. I was going to risk it. My plan was to fly knee him in the face. I had 3 ways of finishing him. That was one of them. And I was waiting for him. I was probing him. I was attacking him, but he never countered back. Whenever he countered back, it was always weird in a way that he'd leave it too long. Like the weirdest rhythm of a fight. He'd take a minute off and attack for 30 seconds and take another minute off and then try and attack. Like it's a weird, and we already knew this coming in. So for me, I risk it. You've seen me. You've seen my fucking resume. I'm not scared to risk. I risk it every fucking time when I get in there. I risk my life. I risk my fucking health. I risk millions and millions and millions of dollars. So I take calculated risk, but I was willing to risk it for the biscuit. I was willing to risk it just so I can really catapult myself in this market. And I feel like he didn't oblige. And it could have been his chance as well. Because definitely, I mean, he's a formidable opponent. Don't get me wrong. Like the shit he cracked me with in the first round, I knew, okay, you can't get hit by that again. But then after that, you had like another maybe, you know, 23 minutes to land that again if you actually did work. But he didn't. But I was ready to risk it. He wasn't. That's the bottom line.
By the way, speaking of embedded, that scene there might be one of the best in the history of that series. I don't know if everyone saw it, but it was in the last episode. You're sitting in your hotel room and you're crying. I think you're listening to Nipsey Hussle. Am I correct? And you get very emotional. Yeah, why were you crying?
It was just emotions. I didn't even realize. Like I was just in my feels. And then Mitch is real good. He just crept up. And Mitch is my friend as well. So, but then like, I opened my eyes and I saw he was there. I was like, you don't even fucking know embedded. Because, see, I'm not stupid. Like, I could have told Mitch easily, nah, cut that bit out. Because I know, like, oh, I don't want to be the new Jordan Criming. But I don't really care. I'm not scared to be vulnerable and show strength in my vulnerability because I know what I have done throughout the years to get to this point, in my career. And that was just a moment, like, after, the, you know, doing the, you get wrapped in the towel. I'm just laying on the bed. I've made weight easily. And I'm just, like, reflecting on how far I've come to be here, how much I've been through to be here. And it's all happening exactly. Like, I'm all over the strip this week, driving in a different Porsche every day of the week that they just gave me. You know, I'm seeing my face on every fucking billboard. You know, on ESPN, my face is everywhere. You know, exactly the way I planned, exactly the way I seen it. So for me, it was just a moment like of gratitude, just like, yes, like if you really, like, what do you say? Goal. You have a goal. You go, like, you know what I mean? Like, that was my moment. That was my moment of just like really soaking it in. Like, yeah, I went and I got it, you know, so it was beautiful.
It was beautiful.
It was raw. It was as real as it gets.
I suggest if you missed it, go back and watch it even though the fight's over. It was just an amazing moment. By the way, the walkout was amazing as well. I loved it. I loved the tone, completely different than the last one. The rose petals. Was there a significance behind it? I mean, deeper than what we saw?
Yeah, I mean, I told you my cat passed away on February 10th, and that whole, like, because I was listening to my old phone that whole day, and it was just, you know, when you like, I haven't heard this track before, and you just listen to old music, and music has a way of evoking different emotions out of you, and evokes some, like, it just created this hyperbolical time chamber in my car, and I was a vessel, and I was just getting these messages of how this show's going to look, and I'm going to produce the show. So I was like, yes, this is how it's going to look. And I don't know, fuck, it was just like, even like a little tribute to my cat, maybe because of the way the ancient ones, my ancestors were, like, revered cats. Like, have you seen Don't Fuck With Cats?
I have not, but I've heard it's tremendous.
Don't fuck with cats, Ariel. Don't do it. Someone fuck with my cat. Someone fuck with my cat. And that really hurt me, and it's something I had to deal with. And I know people don't really care that much about, like, you know, animal companions or whatnot, but she was someone I was hoping would be around for the next 20 years. Like, I don't think I can ever get another cat because she was the sweetest. And yeah, but for me, that gave me the inspiration just through just being inspired by her death. Like, I was just like, nah, life is short. I know for some people it's just a cat, but like, fuck, anyone can get run over any moment. Even this week, shout out to ER. My man, I never got to meet him, but ER the brawler, Zarius Moore, the enforcer, a Crump King, he passed away. And, you know, it still got to, like, I mean, it still gets to you. It still lets you know that death is everywhere. Like, death is around me lately. It's just weird. So it just makes me have to, like, get all my ducks in a row. Makes me have to just, like, go after things in life that I'm like, why am I fucking still doing this? I don't have to. I've got the money for it. Go get it. You know, like, little things, even just people I haven't talked to in a while that I really wanted to reach out to. I hit them up now. I'm just like, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. Just because life is short, man. It really is.
Two last things for you, Izzy. I really appreciate this. What do you think of the left side of his face? I heard you allude to this, and it's something talked about online, but what, as a fighter, what do you think is going on there with his eye? And you said you saw, like, his energy was different on the left side, so you were going to attack the right side. What do you think is going on? I know you're not trying to play doctor here, but you've felt him now. What's going on there?
Not just his face, his body. There's something on the left side of his body. He moves. He's, don't get me wrong, he's a specimen, blah, 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 the way you media portray him. But he's not made of steel, I guarantee you that. If he is, like, it's malleable steel, very, very malleable steel. It's just his left side of his body, something's up there, something seized up there, or I don't know if it's his neck. But his eye definitely gives it away. His left eye definitely gives it away. And, yeah, I mean, even his coaches after the fight, his people after the fight, the way he conducted himself, I'm just like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I never said he wasn't a formidable opponent, but I was never really a fan of his style anyway. And I was never really a fan of him as an athlete anyway, because his style doesn't really relate to me. But yeah, he was a dominant fighter at certain points, but the way he conducted himself in this last fight, between me and him, we both know, look at me, boy, you know, like, I lost respect for him after that.
Okay, and finally, we look ahead. Paulo Costa was in attendance, but then I think he got escorted out because he tried to jump over the railing, him and Valid Ismail. He was supposed to be on the show today. He canceled at the last minute, unfortunately. I wanted to ask him about that. But what did you make of what he did afterwards and his words as well, calling the performance shameful?
I mean, he has to – he knows who the champion is. He has to, like, stir a narrative or something like that. But that fight's going to be easy. That's going to be a finish. I'll finish that fucker. Like, he's already in his feelings. He's already in it. Like, you know when there's a bull and there's a matador, like, you just poke at it and get the ultimate reaction? That's exactly that. He's a guy that I don't have to poke that much. I don't have to prod. But I'm going to have fun with the press conference on this one. I'm going to have fun with the lead up. I'm going to have fun with poking the bear. I'm going to have fun slaying the bear.
Ideal world, when does it happen?
They're talking July, but we'll see. I don't care. Like, July sounds good to me. I got time, Mario. I got time.
Okay, so you're in no rush, in other words. Like, Perth is a little crazy, right?
a birth? No, that's Alex's show. That's his time to shine. That's my brother's time to shine. I mean, yeah, like last time in Auckland, that was Dan's time to shine. This time it's Alex's time to shine. I'm not one of these guys who likes to hog the spotlight.
Okay.
It's my boys. It's their turn.
So summertime is more like July, August time frame is more likely than earlier.
Likely, yeah. I mean, there's enough to go around. There's enough to go around. You know me. I'm already walking around. I'm healed up. Like, my face isn't really scarred or nothing like that. Oh, wait. I might be the first fighter to leave away without being... Oh, no. There's a little... Never mind. See that?
I'm the
first one to leave on skate. Oh, no. I got a boo-boo.
Wow. You're all good. You're all good. And again, congrats. There's a lot at stake. You did what you had to do. I thought the analogy of someone, you know, coming to take what is yours, you're defending the land, is the perfect one. It's incumbent upon him to take what is yours. That's what I said at the top of the show, and I agree with that statement.
And remember, even after the first round, after that punch landed, and he could see I was compromised, you go after it. Go. You go after it. Well, he didn't. He waited there for me to come back and make the same mistake. Are you dumb? Because I'm not.
Izzy, thank you so much. Congrats on the win. Enjoy it. And we'll talk to you soon. Always appreciate you coming on. I told Ash I was worried that this was the fight that you went big time on us.
What's your name again?
But in the end, it's coming. By the way, it's coming. I'm seeing hints of you being like, oh, I want to live on a farm. I'm tired of the media.
When?
It's coming. Mark my words, it's coming. Not yet.
It is, but on my terms. Fair. Even on the farm, they got Wi-Fi. I got Wi-Fi on the farm. I can still hit you up. Don't worry, bro.
We'll see.
And one thing, it's because you'll ask the tough questions. Even there'll be a time when I do something stupid and you have to ask the tough questions. But as long as you give me a fair shake, as long as you're not a clickbait, then you'll always be in my good books. And I hope it goes the other way. But yeah, you know, because... You're a journalist. You have a job to do, I understand. So you ask the tough questions. That's cool. As long as I get a fair shake, then we're cool.
Amen. That will be the case from here on out.
Amen. L'chaim, my brother.
L'chaim, my man.
L'chaim.
Enjoy. Mazel tov. There he is. Israel Adesanya, the man himself, the reigning defending UFC middleweight champion. What a performance. What a night. I mean, look, co-main event. Who thought it would be that good? So you can make a case that that gave you your money's worth. And there was something to be said for what he did. He explained it perfectly there. He really did. Now, again, is this the kind of fight that you pop into the VCR if you have a VCR? Does anyone have VCRs? Is it the kind of fight you pop in there if you want to get someone to love MMA? No. But guess what? You know what else you could do? You know what you could do? You could pop in Izzy versus, I don't know, Robert Whittaker, Kelvin Gastelum. So, you know, I did ask Yoel Romero to come on the show. You probably know that. He sent me this tweet. Sorry, I no go on your show at Ariel Helwani. I am trying to walk on my leg. Hashtag people's champ. You see him on Saturday. He was doing the salsa after Mike Bond asked him a question at the press conference. Today he appears to be taking a bit of a stroll back home in Miami, in South Florida. So in the end, he doesn't win the belt. Izzy retains. Zhang Weili retains. Up next for the UFC this weekend, they're in Brasilia. Kevin Lee against Charles Oliveira. What a great fight that is. Also, Gilbert Burns against Damian Maia. If you're a BJJ fan, woo-wee. The return of Johnny Walker. There's Bellator this weekend at Mohegan Sun. It's not Josh Barnett fighting. It's Matt Mitrione. They had a big Bellator press conference today in New York. They did it on a Monday. I mean, how are you going to do it on a Monday? I can't attend. I live in New York. I mean, really. We could have thought that one through, if I'm being honest. But anyway, for now, we are out of time. It has been a fun show. It has been a very eclectic show. When you have the likes of Bob Arum, you have the likes of Jay Park, Israel Adesanya, Zhang Weili. It's one of my favorite shows of the year. Valentina Shevchenko. And I think it's going to be a big week for us, my friends. Stay tuned. I think it's going to be a big, 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 big week. But for now, we shall say goodbye. I want to thank all of you for tuning in. As always, always love the post pay-per-view shows. Didn't go to sleep Saturday, went straight to the airport. Was feeling a little out of it yesterday. Had to take my dog, my poor Matcha, to the emergency care. She injured her paw. She's doing okay. Thanks to all who sent in their good wishes. Now I'm going to go home and cuddle with her, okay? Cuddle. Could you remember the first time that we spoke about her on the show with New York Rick? Now here I am cuddling. At emergency care, we can all change. For now, though,
Thank you very much to Sean O'Malley. Thank you very much to Neil Magny. Congratulations to both of them on the big win. Thank you very much to Jay Park. Thank you very much, and happy birthday to Valentina Shevchenko, also to Dominic Cruz. Thank you very much to Zhang Wei Li. Appreciate her stopping by. Congratulations, sir. Thank you very much to the great Bob Arum, and thank you very much, and congrats again to Israel Adesanya. Back next week, same time and place. Until then, I say peace. I'm out of here. I have to say this to you, Valentina. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Just hours after my wife's giving birth, and I get a notification from your side like, hey, man, where are you at? We're at your doorstep, and no one's answering your door.
The reigning defending UFC middleweight champion. Is he in bed? Yes, he is in bed. And there's his nipple. Would it be fair to say that you weren't all that impressed with Zhang in this fight?
She did good. She did good. She's strong, but you could see now she has this struggle.
UFC guys are great promoters. They've done a great, great job. But as far as I'm concerned, it's trash. I don't like it. I don't like to watch it. I mean, but again, I'm just one person.
You still have the braids in. When do you take those out?
I don't know. That's a good question, Ariel.
Well, thank you. Did she bring you flowers, you know, a balloon, a stuffed animal, anything?
Nope. Brought me 3 cups to choose from. Like, all right, dude, let's go.
Is it possible that that was maybe the weirdest fight that you have ever been a part of?
100% the weirdest fight I've ever been a part of.
Tyson Fury against Anthony Joshua. And if that happens, you'll likely have to...
Whoa. Anthony Joshua is getting knocked out in June 20th at Tottenham Stadium in London by my guy, Kubrat Pula. Take it to the bank.
Is it true you have the baseball that Tony Ferguson gave you with you over there?
Oh, sorry.
No problem. There it is. And you just had to sit there, and they're eating tremendous food.
All week. So all week, it's pretty much me following them around, going out to eat, and I'm watching.
I could feel the thud. I was like, ooh. Don't get hit by that again.
Tulgan Hunan Menen.
It's correct. Now you speak Kyrgyz.
I'm going to learn how to speak Mandarin, and then we're going to switch. You're going to do English. I'll do Mandarin, all right?
Cool. Okay.
Cool.